dropped it up once.
You're on record, eh? It's around 6:30, and I thought we could work until 10. Or if when 10 comes around and you're still full of pep, we can go. If we're full of pep, we can go later. If not, we can quit. Well, we really don't know. Even though you gave us some reports individually, you gave some reports last night, we really don't know how much work you did over there and how you did it. So what we want to do is try to find out how you did it, how much you did it, how much you did, and then so that all of us here in Delano will know, also so that what was done in New York will be shared with people in the other places, and similarly, Chicago will share its information and its experiences with the others. Then we hope that in this way we'll be able to pinpoint some of the weaknesses and some of the strong points of the program. And I guess by the time we get around to making some definite decisions, then we'll pretty much have an idea of what it is that we want. I think that this will, our conversation will bring out, you know, some of those changes that we have to have in the program, if we have to have any. So maybe the best way to do it is to Jim and Fred and I will ask questions of you, and then, you know, you will respond to us, and then we'll probably pursue, if you give us an answer, this will trigger off another question, and we'll pursue all, you know, as many of these thoughts that we can get and try and get from you the answers. And instead of having each one getting up and making another report or another speech, and always thought we could get it out this way. Beth, you have anything to add?
No, except that it seemed to me that instead of just staying with one person and then letting him get completely finished before we start on another one, it'd be better to start with one person. And when, say, he's that person is describing something that he did that worked and how he did it, if that reminds any of the rest of you about something that you did along the same line, you know, that worked, you can interrupt and explain what you did and so forth, and, you know, go around anybody else that had anything to say that has directly to do with what the first speaker said. Then after you've gotten all through, then we go back to the first speaker again, and if you've got anything more to say, why, he can go ahead and say it, and then you can bring in whatever you want to in talking about your experiences as they relate to what he's talking about.
Jim?
Well, I hope what we'll think about also is not so much details as to the names of brokers and things like that, as this kind of a rather, really, where did you find the most effective pressure points?
Right.
In other words, what button do you push in a different city that gets the kind of reaction you want? And what buttons did you push that just ended up in nothing? And so we can, you know, forget about some of those other buttons and just concentrate on the one that we want to push. I think that the buttons that are pushed for brokers, for instance, are probably different from the buttons for chain stores. And that's what we want to get out.
I guess another very important point is, and this is our job to try and find out, to be able to distinguish, you know, from, well, fact from fancy. Because we can imagine that we did a lot of things actually we didn't. In other words, you know, we can imagine we're very successful and we weren't successful. We know that we weren't successful, at least to the point of stopping Jimara. We know we were not successful in stopping any of the major cities. We know that much. And we know there were some areas the reports we have were stopped completely. Some of the lesser cities. But Boston, New York, Philadelphia, Chicago, Detroit, Los Angeles, perhaps it would probably, and then the two cities in Canada would probably be the eighth most important area. And with the exception of Canada, I don't know how much we stopped there with, because I'm not familiar, we'll get this from you, Mary, but with the exception of two cities in Canada, the ones in the United States, we were not able to stop them, you know. With one more exception, in New York, the Lord was able to stop the produce people at the market, John. What do you call it, market in New York?
Hunt Point.
Terminal market. She was able to stop about 15 guys there from buying it. But still, the distributor, which is across the river, was not stopped. So, okay, we can start now and... you want to start, Chris?
Well, I thought that one good way of breaking it down so that we can have something to tie into right away would be to start with how we went to labor, the way that we approached labor in order to try and get something out of them, and what we did and how we did it, and whether it worked or whether it was a big flop. That would be one point of interest, because labor is so terribly important in all this. And then naturally, the next, or another big point of interest, is how we approach the distributors, what we did to try and stop them, and whether we, the boo-boos that we made and the good points that we made. And the same way with the chain stores. Well, those just happen to be three big points of interest. There are others, but I think if we can cover those three tonight, why, we'll be a long way along the line. So why don't we start with Joe over here, and we can just start going around.
Yeah, I just want to. So we'll know when we're asking the questions here, if you give us your name here and the city you work in, pass it around and we'll have a response. It'll be a lot easier for us to. If we want to ask a question pertaining to one city, so it'll be easier for us to know who's working in the city.
Joe, you could start by telling us what you did when you went to, say, Detroit and Cleveland to get the help of labor.
And I assume that you wanted, in short, the words, not in the long drawn out story, but in short.
Yeah.
All right. It didn't take me very long to find out that by talking to anybody in Detroit, I was going to get anywhere. It was a case of a simple little old farm worker coming before somebody. And I found very few people who were really interested in talking to me. So what I done then, I started talking to union people, like, for example, John Schreier, Alejo Zalpiero, Herschel Womack of the retail press, and so on. And I had those people contact the people that I wanted to talk to.
Now it's erased.
Very good. There was many cases where even the union people were not really interested or really helpful. A lot of time was lost because these people were either out negotiating a contract or they were making plans to go on strike, or they had their own problems, and I just had to wait. But all those commitments that I got in Detroit from those people, I didn't get them because on account of me. I got them because of the union leaders. In many cases, I had as many as five and six union leaders calling up to the one certain individual. That's the only way that I found that attention could be brought to this case. In many cases, that's the only way that I found that these people would sit down and talk to me. Before, it was like Mr. So-and-so is in a meeting or call back next Monday. I would call back next Monday, and I was supposed to call back on Wednesday. And so I had to use the union. I was very fortunate, like most of you know, to have these two people working with me, because when this man introduced himself and he said, I'm Mike Klein, I'm working out of Walter Ruther's office, Solidarity House, we're back in the strike, he didn't take those people long to listen to reason.
Which people were these?
I'm speaking about the Kroger's, the Wrigley's, the Great Scott's, the Chatham's, the Foreman's, the chain stores. Now, I had to start with this chain story first because the real power was going to have to be used with at the terminal. And in the early days, I didn't have anybody to fall back on. For an example, during these 5 weeks while all this was coming about, on my free time and at night, I would try to contact the Latin American group, the colored people, and Vietnam people, who is headed by Evelyn Sellers. So I had to start on the market and work on them, which were very easy. And then the idea was to, whenever I had already mustered all these supports, then I could go to the terminal and see what could be done. But the way it happened, I just couldn't really completely clean up Detroit before going to Cleveland. However, when I left Detroit, there was only one label being sold there, and that was M&B label. And the man told me point blank that he would never drop that label. After a while, we came back and we came to find out that Mr. Andrews, who was the only rebel there in the city, had broken his word. And then later on, of course, you know, Andy came over and we went to the terminal and talked to Andrews. And we got him to send a telegram that, in my own personal opinion, doesn't amount to anything, because anybody can send a telegram right now and half an hour later send another one saying the opposite.
Joe, how many chain stores that you know of broke their promises?
In Detroit? None. In Detroit, not a single chain store broke their promise. And also, I checked out A&P about nine different times, and only one time did I found a scab label in the A&P. And the guy apologized, and he said he really couldn't understand how this came about. Either it was an old box or something like that, but I kept on checking A&P, and they stayed clean. There was only one case where they had sketches.
This was in Detroit?
In Detroit. Yes.
How often did you check the store?
2 days out of every week.
By how many stores did you have to check 2 times a week?
But what I done, I would only check about two Krovers a day, two rate leads. Well, I'll put it this way. I would check only about 15 stores in a period of 2 days every week.
Reese, what about Colorado? What about how'd you do with labor over there for the boycott?
I had quite a bit of trouble with the regional office. Fred Piper, he just didn't want to cooperate. I had to more or less force myself on him. I had a car there for a while, but I didn't want to get a driver's license because I wanted to get the regional office. They have most regional offices, they have organizers. Most central bodies have organizers. And I thought that if I could get them to give me one of these fellows, I could do a better job there in the area. And so I just played helpless. I said, well, I can't get around here because I don't have a car, and Fred, you've got to let me have one of these fellows who are Bill Whitman or Joe Garcia to help me to get around. By that time, when Tom left, Piper's attitude changed quite a bit. He was having trouble with Joe Garcia, and he was more or less taking it out inadvertently. He was taking it out to affecting my work. And I had numerous commitments from organized labor, but I had to follow up on, I had to keep my foot in the door and go out of my way to visit these people and to talk to them about getting him to help.
What were the commitments? What were some of the commitments that you had from them?
They had promised to bring people out to the picket line and for a demonstration that we planned for the inaugural market. And I had to keep seeing these people and reminding them that there would be a picket line on a certain day or a demonstration on a certain day, and that they should bring these people out. I've found that since I've been in the labor movement, a lot of these fellows, they come from an old school, and they think that you have to talk tough to these brokers and to these chain store managers, top managers. But they would urge me to take a hard line with them, call them up, and demand that they remove the grapes from their stock. I don't like it when anybody talks tough to me, and so I didn't do that. I would send them literature. I'd call them up, and I'd send them our literature, and I would talk nice to them, and I found that they would cooperate more with an attitude like that.
Why do you think so many of the labor leaders couldn't help? Although they said they would, but at the very moment they couldn't come through.
I think it's apathy to them. They're just not interested. They're more concerned with they live out in the suburbs now, and they concern themselves more with crabgrass than the labor movement. I also found that it's a mistake to say sir, or Mr. So-and-so, when you meet these people from the labor movement, if it's at all possible, if I think it's best, in my opinion, you get on a first name basis with them as soon as possible, and just leave out that sir and Mr., regardless of the position.
Do you think you have any preconceived ideas or notions about the labor leaders, or the, better this way, do you think you have any prejudice towards them?
I think I do see that.
What about Boston, Michael? How did you with labor there?
Well, when I went up there, I didn't have to do any stuff like go and talk to them, because it was really built up for me, because they had that office there. They talked to Camilio, to Frank Murphy, and all those.
Who's Camilio?
Camilio is the president.
Yes.
The one? Labor Combine. And Frank Murphy is supposed to be the representative. Director of the WLG or something like that.
Churcher's guy.
And so we had that office there. We had we didn't have a hard time at that point. But I did have a hard time to have them move to do something for real. Terrorism bird, he had to
Excuse me. I think that I don't think we're really getting to what we're trying to get. I think all of you should ask questions. Just interrupt and ask questions, you know, and pinpoint people and get answers, and I think that's going to be better. I don't think we're going to do it from here.
That's the only way we can really
keep your answers very short, you know. Very short, so then just ask for the... Raise your hand and I'll give you the floor. You can ask the question, so I won't be asking two questions at a time. All right, go ahead. Anytime you want to interrupt, just raise your hand, and then we'll interrupt at any time, huh?
So, as far as I go, some of the union people there, that most of the help that was and financial support, they already asked for to pass a resolution for to send a letter to all the membership, to all the locals, and it took quite a while, but a month and a half to do it. And just before we come, about 3 weeks before, they passed the resolution. So actually, was not a. Then I saw no solution there. And then I went to the students, and I fought very strong. But I have the students working with us, it would embarrass the union people. And I always, mostly every day, I kind of said, these people is not a unionized people. They don't know anything about unionism. Me doing most of what the unions are.
What were some of the specific things that labor did? Name two, three things that labor did for the boycott since you were there.
Well, what labor did, first thing, they gave us their office. Second, it was money. It would let us go into these meetings. He was inviting us to the meetings, so if we call, if we could attend to the meeting, he would say, okay. This is the only product I find.
Yes.
How did you do with as far as the Teamsters go?
We didn't have no luck with the Teamsters. I didn't talk to them. Terrorism were talking to them. Period, telling me.
Yes, ma'am.
Well,
a
part of the Teamsters, as far as we could
gather,
was Bravo 25. They told Terry that, the majority of the graves were being owned by the wholesalers, and that Local 25 wasn't handling the graves. And the only way they could help us at all was to close down the whole thing, because graves were only one item there. And
John?
Did you go to the Joint Council in Boston? Teams of the Joint Council?
Terrorism.
What kind of reaction did you get?
They would help like many of them, but if you pick up the tiger, all the damage would happen. That was the only way to go.
Peter, yes. Question. I would assume that anybody from this unit wouldn't be able to go to the Teamsters International on a very high level because they were affiliated with ASL-CIO. And I wonder what would be the best way to get to a certain local in the city or a joint council. What would be the best way to get them to move? In other words,
Bill.
I did in Seattle, and I didn't get a whole heck of a lot of help except information and coverage in their paper. They were very impressed by the telegram from, Grammy. And that was before he saw the telegram from Mr. Grammy, with the sanction. He wasn't interested in hearing from me. The first thing I did was put that telegram down on his desk. And then he agreed to talk to me.
Who was this?
This was the president of the Joint Council, Teamsters Joint Council, Seattle area.
The difference here would be that that's really part of Grammy's territory.
That's right.
And I tried the same thing with Tretola, or Bill, I guess John was there, and they couldn't care less who Bill Grammy was.
I found the same thing to be true.
Is that list coming back to me? Who has the list? Keep it going, brother. Keep it rolling, brother.
The interesting thing about the Teamsters, there's three factions of them, but it happens that the president of the Food Council in Philadelphia is also the president of the Joint Council of Teamsters. Now, when we were having trouble with grapes coming into the terminal, and when Local 929 was the Teamsters Union, the local was supposedly cooperating with us, and when I found out the grapes were coming in, so I called, as Frank mentioned the meeting the other night, I called the guy to join council, and he says, well, Marion, he says, these are independent. He said, maybe the joint council supports you, but he said, these locals can do whatever they want, and if the individual local doesn't want to help you, they don't
have to do it. Could I say that we've had more trouble with the Teamsters in getting cooperation than anybody else? Would you all of you agree that?
Yes.
Why?
No.
Why do you think so?
Initially in Seattle, we got more support from the Teamsters and unions that were very closely affiliated with Teamsters. Retail clerks still used to be a Teamsters union, still has their paper printed in the Teamsters press. They have very close relationships, and we got more help from the retail.
There would be an exception, no?
Okay.
There's the biggest
I differ with Marion with the situation at least that we had in Chicago. For one thing, before I ever even tried to make a contact with a joint council president, I went to see the president of Local 781 and the secretary treasurer of Local 703, 738, and 710. I went to four locals. Each one of them gave me the same answer, that they could not move without the sanction of the joint council. And it took, I tried three ways to get to the president of the joint council. One was Father Riker, he's a friend of the secretary treasurer of Local 703, who's the produce and handler of the terminal. Now, I tried to him, and I tried to get it from Dan Healy, the regional director.
What do you think of his sale that they wouldn't give us a cooperation?
Well, for one thing, after staying on the back of the president of the joint council for a month, calling him in every twice a day, I got a meeting with the president, secretary treasurer, and the recording secretary of the local. And the thing that I got from this conversation is that there's still met a cell letter for the Delano from.
How many other Philadelphia?
You mean as far as the Teamsters?
Yes.
You mean what went on at Georgia?
No, why do you think it was difficult to get cooperation from the Teamsters in Philadelphia?
Well, I know that we did get cooperation from one local, but I think the biggest reason is that they don't want to do anything that's going to, they don't want a picket line that's going to fool their men off. That was the biggest thing. I think that was the single biggest thing every time. They didn't want anything.
What about New York then?
I think it was because we had nothing to offer in return, you know. We couldn't, at least at our level, we couldn't, they knew that in the future we wouldn't be able to return them the favor, say, give us a sanction.
What do you say, what about up in Portland?
That's also very true in Portland. One of the only reasons I think that we got somewhere with them when we got some good help from them was that they, all the unions have a fairly good rapport, and the Joe Edgar, the head of the joint council up there, is very close with the FLCIO in the sense that, you know, personally, you know, gets along with them real well, and they were the ones who set up my being able to meet Joe Edgar, because Mick Jones had met him before and he told me not to not to bother the commissioners, and I didn't go to the first meeting, but it took a while to get through. But in a sense, they didn't want anything that would give them a lot of bother. But because Joe Edgar sort of was friends with the FLCIO, assigned one of his men to go check out the warehouses and such. But
what about in Vancouver?
Do
we have teams over there?
Yeah. When I went in there, I showed the telegram from Grammy also to him. And he said that they weren't directly involved, that it would be teachers coming out of Grammy in Portland that would be creating a break from there. But he said he was willing to, you know, cooperate. He said that he would, you know, be willing to send a letter.
Well, we have different experience in Kansas City.
I think it's very strange, but it seems in Kansas City, we didn't get an official sanction as such. All we got was an endorsement. But the thing in Kansas City is the man, Mr. Williams, Roy Williams, it's a big name, it's a powerful name. And I noticed that any time you mention that Williams, when we got the official thing that Williams was behind us, you were okay, you're good, and there's a pull for you. And all the retail truck drivers and things on the produce market where they organized, the word got out fast. We just said Williams is behind us, and that was it. And this is probably due to many things, but also the Gibbons is one of the largest, and that it was a man, really, in Kansas City, Roy Williams.
Did any of you find out that it depended on who you talked to? In other words, if you talked to the Joint Council, and the Joint Council had already sanctioned, and you talked to them about the local that you wanted to get the help from, did the Joint Council tell you, well, that depends on the local?
Yes.
Then if you went to the local, and they already knew that the Joint Council had agreed, had given you the sanction, well, no, the other way around. The Joint Council hadn't given the sanction. So then did the local say, well, we can't move until the Joint Council gives the sanction? And then if you got the sanction, then it was the other way around. So they could use the thing any way that they wanted to.
Yeah.
John?
Yeah, I found this to be true. And I think, as I saw, the only answer to that is to get them all in one room at one time, you know. And the only time you do that is at the Joint Council Executive Meeting, which Dolores finally got us into. And there, the president of the local was directly involved, the produce local, was really running scared. And but Caratola, who was president of the Joint Council, apparently saw something that in the future could be done for him from the AFL-CIO. And what was all we got to help? We never got the written sanction, but we got to help.
He was afraid of
interrupting the relations he had with the company then. You know, that there was going to be a complete work stoppage.
What are the unions aware as much as the Teamsters? What union do we ask as much as of the Teamsters?
Retail workers. Don't get anything from them. I've never gotten anything from them.
Which other union?
Not my case. not in New York. We didn't.
What other?
We
what other?
Not cross the picket line. I don't know, mate.
What other unions? Do we ask as much? Would you say that we ask the Teamsters more than anybody else, even though they don't do it? We ask them to do more.
Yes.
How many would agree that we ask them to do more than anybody else?
With the exception of longshoremen.
Would you agree to say that they're the key union in our boycott?
Yes, yes. And also the training. Brotherhood
railway training. Well, we don't even know who they are. We can't even find them.
I have a question concerning what's been brought up about the railroad trainmen. Now, my understanding was from letters and other stuff that we got that there was a top-level meeting with them in Delano where they were supposed, and I did get a letter to this effect, that they were supposed to contact us and with information. Now, I know this
letter
from Delano, where saying that
from who?
From you, one of the letters.
Yes, it was.
Where it says that I would be contacted, and some Cubans would be contacted in Kansas City, either from you or from the trainmen. But there was some kind of negotiation going with them.
No, it didn't come from me.
Well, we got the letter.
So somebody sent it out.
Can I get you back to the team for just because I have something that comes to my mind. Let's reverse it, huh? Say that there's a union that's boycotting. We're involved in fresh grapes. Is anything in your mind figure that there's a union that's involved in a boycott and they come to ask us for help?
Fertilizer sector.
Okay. What kind of help would they ask us for? In the same. They wouldn't come for money like we go to most of the unions. So they wouldn't come in for an endorsement or for a car. But the same kind of help, the same degree of help. What do you think they would be asking us to do other unions? Another union.
Not to work.
That's not
the
paper pack. Okay. And how far do you think they get with us if they ask us
not
to do that?
Far.
Why?
Well, secondary boycott.
Supposing we say the hell with the relations, we don't care about the relations.
But your members aren't working then, they're not getting money.
And suppose we said, as leaders, we said, we don't care if the workers don't work and lose money. They should, in brotherhood and solidarity, should help that union.
I think in the position we are right now, we would say that, but in the position that teams are right now, I think the union.
Say what we said this, and then go, carry a step forward.
Then what they say is, we want them to win our strike, and that's what the Teamster said to me.
What else?
I think it's in case.
They're asking us, you're in charge of a local junk, and they come to you and say, look, don't pick the damn grapes and don't pack them because we're boycotting this guy, and we want to hurt him. And you don't care about it. You care about the company relationships, but you're not that afraid of them, so you're going to take them on.
Whatever we do, if we don't pick the grapes or we don't pack them, we're going to stick our necks out, with the company or, somebody. So we're going to want something in return. And if it's a union that can help us in the future, and on one of our boycotts, such as the Teamsters, maybe we'd be more willing to stick our necks out.
But say that we don't want anything in return.
Can they get us legally?
Yeah. No, they couldn't get us legally.
Why not?
Well,
because we're covered by NLR.
But say that contract gives us the right to strike and to boycott and to stop production anytime we wanted to. It seems to me there's one very important factor.
Is the decision made by this guy or is the decision made by the people working?
It'll depend on the membership.
That's right. How many members would back the leadership on a decision like that when they say, you got to stop work? And it seems to me, that if we... it seems to me that when we talk about the Teamsters, that we don't give them any, that we have to understand at least one thing, even if they wanted to help us, how far could they get with their own members? To stop work?
The warehouse was, the head of warehouse said exactly that in Seattle. So that even if I asked these people not to do it, they wouldn't because we don't fight anymore. We have middle class contracts.
I think it's too bad of an answer.
The reaction we got was, was, and it's legitimate. It's a legitimate answer. Is that their business agent or their local president cannot even approach their members and ask them to stop work or stop handling a certain product because it would be in violation of the contract to be able to get them done. It's left to us to organize these people. If we don't want them to cross our picket line.
Well, first of all, we're not asking them to. Most Teamsters and produce will handle all produce, and we're asking them just to stop handling Guimara grapes. And usually, in a stall, there'd be only maybe 100 boxes, but they'll also be like lettuce, and they still be working, but not handling Guimara grapes.
Yeah, but they would also be covered under the contract, right?
I think your situation in San Francisco is exactly reverse of what you're talking about. The official word upstairs is nobody touches it. Down in the street, where we have people there every night talking to these men, staying up all night with them, a load of grapes comes in and he says, well, if the produce house wants to accept it, I want to make my buck, and he's going to work it. Now, the business agent, for a long time, was down there very faithful, and he ran into some problems with our people and his own people, and he got to the position, well, I'm not going to get involved. So he'll take a walk, you know, whenever the hot grapes have come in. Well, then the membership, they said, well, we're behind you. We'll support you. They'll give you all this all night. But when those grapes come in, and particularly if it means them having to work a few more minutes to put it to the side, something like that, they don't.
How many of you picket at the grape stand like San Francisco? Actually, where they're being loaded day in and day out.
When we first got to Chicago, we went to the auction itself. We had a picket line out there on the docks. This auction is some private property, railroad property. We checked with our lawyers. He went down with us a day before, and we looked the place over. We said, go ahead and do it and see what happens. But when we did, we went down there when we knew that there was grapes there. So the first thing we did, we went down there. We put up a picket line right where the grapes were being unloaded. The Teamsters that were unloading it, they walked off the job. They wouldn't unload the darn thing. You know, and the management went out there and started and talking and telling them to go back to work, and they said, to hell with it, we're not going to work and unload this cab grape. Then they called the guy said, all right, so close the van up until your representative comes down. The recording secretary from 703 came down, complained to the cops that we had no right to be there, we were trespassing on private property, and that they should haul us off to jail. Then they went down there and told the guys to go back to work. They said, we're not going to go back to work. Those grapes are scabs. Then what happened is that they had some college kids working there, and the recording secretary ordered them to go to work. But the same guys that were unloading it did not work in unloading the grapes. And what happened is that later on they were told by this same guy, which is a business agent, not to even listen to us, not to even talk to us, unless they gave the word.
How many did you continue picketing?
Well, for one thing, when you know, we went back another time, and as well as to the produce terminal,
mm-hmm.
Because we have two places. The usual Jamar John comes into the auction, and the other one comes into the terminal.
Mm-hmm.
And the workers, you know, they had.
What do you think would happen if you continued picketing anyway?
We stayed there for 2 weeks, for 2.5 weeks in the
picketing every day.
Every day.
Did you scare any other buyers off?
We scared some of them off, but the problem there is that you know, there's so this guy wants some quality stuff, and all of it comes from the limit. We have some from Sanger, you know.
Yeah, like, no, I don't think that's a good reason. I don't think it's a good excuse. I don't think that's the real reason why, you know, you should have stopped picketing. It would seem to me
we stopped picketing for this reason. When Andy came down, we were still on the picket line. We were whenever a buyer would come in, you know, we would pounce on him. And came out with two buckets of grapes, Frank or I or some of the others would follow him to wherever they were going and talk the guys here so if we could. But Andy came down and said, well, you're wasting your energy picketing. And then we explained the reason. He said, well, gee, I think this can be done some other way, and told us to quit. We could do something.
What did you do then?
Well, then we got wind of the wine company. And he said, well, we should move on to the wine company.
Do you think would you say that was a good action?
Oh, my son, we've been about
him. No, I'm asking about his. Do you think that was proper to do, to stop picketing and go follow the wine?
No,
I think we really shouldn't picket it because I think these are two very serious mistakes I made on this boycott, and if I had to do it over again, I'd do it. I was going to picket the produce terminal in Ontario. Now, the thing is, this is illegal, but that wasn't the point. But I was blackmailed, really blackmailed by the Teamsters because they told me, and I fell for it like a sucker. And I realize that now. They told me that if I picketed that terminal, that I was jeopardizing any Teamster support that I had all over Ontario. That's the first thing they told me. The next thing they told me was that I was going to get into legal troubles and that I better watch my bank account. Now, the same thing happened in Philadelphia. Frank and I were going to picket the terminal. We wanted to picket the food center out there. Now, Bill Greenberg, who's the head of the local that has that thing out there, he tried to do everything, anything to get me not to picket out at that site. Now, I really don't know why he didn't want me to picket, but I really think it was a very serious mistake. I think we should have gone ahead and picketed anyway. I don't know what would have happened, but they don't want us to picket, and I just fell for it.
For the same reason that...
He said that it was secondary boycott, and he told me, now I don't know if this is true or not, but he said that if we picketed them, that they would be, if any of their men stopped work because of this, that we were liable for secondary boycott, and that their union would be liable. They don't have a hot cargo clause in their contract. They have a contract with them, and they cannot stop work. If there was any, that we would be the ones that would be in legal trouble, and so would they.
And they were afraid of rebellion on the part of the members.
Right. If there was a work stoppage,
yes,
he said, not only would you stop the grapes, you'd stop the whole damn terminal. And he said, and I said, it was an informational picket line. He said, who are you trying to kid? That's exactly what he said.
I think we're getting to some of the...
I want to make a comparison here between Philadelphia and Cleveland, too. First of all, I found that the Teamsters, in both cases, had personal interest, self-interest in regard to working there. And it was more than just the membership getting their pay. I also had the feeling that they were trying some...
What kind of personal interest?
The personal interest in regard to their relationship with the produce buyers.
Yeah.
How do you know this?
I'll give you a specific example in Philadelphia where the business agent in that particular an auction had worked there for 40 years. He said, I know, he said, he went up to me, he said, Ed, I'll take care of this, you know, and I know he was lying to his teeth. He said, I'll take care of this, don't worry about it.
They didn't tell you that though in Chicago, did they?
And the Teamsters?
Yeah.
the first thing that happened when, at the end, the only time I ever, this guy had to meet me because I was bothering the joint council president too much, he met me there and I was talking to the president here, Secretary Treasurer here, and the recording secretary yelling in my ear if they wanted us to, we wanted them to win the strike for us.
I remember we were picketing in New York the other day. I was there, and the president of the local came out running, and he talked to one of the cab drivers, and he said, look, if you take the picket line off, we'll get the thing, we'll get cooperation for you immediately. And the cab driver sort of went for it and told me, I said, well, I'm not in charge. We called Paul Sanchez, and Paul Sanchez said, no, we're going to take a picket line off.
Yeah.
So then the guy went into his office, came back, and he said, look, if you're going to do it, why don't you picket all these other guys. There were 15, and we were only picketing 3. Picket all the 15 so he can give me a lot, you can put a lot of pressure, and I can go and, you know, and talk to all of them. And then Paul says, so I'm going to hell. We go to hell, we're going to pick up this guy, and then we're going to get him. And then he came back again, and he said, look, you guys are just, you know, you're causing a lot of problems for me. And then Paul said, yeah, you're also causing it. These guys are also causing a problem for kids and women back in Delano. If you want to pick a line off, you give us a written agreement. You know, get these buyers not to, these buyers and the callers. They're not the producers, the guys that hold the stalls, the jobbers, get them to start handling the grapes. And then the lawyers came and, well, she got them, you know. That morning, it was 3 of them that said that they weren't going to handle it. And they gave her a letter.
See, the, I got the impression in the Philadelphia case where the son of this particular business agent was also was working for one of the you know, the produce jobbers, and it got to the point where they were interrelated. There was a lot of, you know, there was definitely a.
So what was done to offset that?
So and another case in point in Oakland, I'm sure that you ran into this, where several of the Teamsters. Swampers were the sons of the jobbers.
But you know? So what was done to put the pressure so regardless of who was working there, they could respond?
Well, it got to the point where we didn't get any cooperation.
Did you pick at the market?
No, we didn't pick at the market. Okay. Now, in Cleveland, in this case in Cleveland, I didn't find that we got, they sent telegrams to each of the buyers who were handling Scam Bread. I got the impression, and Joe, you can correct me here on this, I got the impression that if these buyers had did not cooperate and we threw up the picket line, that the Teamsters would have helped us. Do you think that? I mean, this is in a case of
Who did picketing at the stores or at the markets, rather? Not the markets, but the produce markets. Who did picketing there? Raise your hand. No, not the stores. The terminal. What was your experience at the terminal?
Opinion of it, who was directly involved in this particular area in the Teamsters, because there was some infighting and factionism there. And this was actually good, because then the Teamsters got very concerned about, you know, to what extent was the picketing going to continue and what it all meant. And the another thing I wanted to say too, at least in my particular area, the Teamsters had more influence with the managers of the stores and the buyers than they did with their own members. That is, they could not influence their members not to handle this stuff, which they couldn't. They never were able to do that. But there were.
Maybe they didn't want to.
Yeah, okay. Either way, you know, being afraid of being rejected by their own members, too, you know, whatever. But there were to Fred Myers, for instance, just calling up and inquiring, you know, what are these grapes that you have, had more influence than a lot of other things. And I mean, I don't know how many times you can use the thread, you know, without coming through with it.
John, what was your experience when you were picking the stalls?
When we first went up there, we got cooperation from some of the swampers up there. Not too many. Didn't last, and there was only one stall in particular where a large number of swampers would not handle the reef. And I think the reason was because we hadn't done a job on myself. We hadn't done a good enough job originally.
What about the buyers that came to the jobbers?
It was really ineffectual, threatening the buyers in most cases. What would happen was, in some cases, instead of the buyers coming to the stalls, we found out that they would just do their business over the phone. In other cases, the buyers would buy in small lots of 15 or 20, so if we did threaten them, we could not really carry out the threat.
You know how the market is over there? What do you call it? Hunt Point? You know how they call the stalls? Well, about 50 of us, and we took one stall, and we were picketing, you know, there's hardly any space.
Yes.
About this much, you know. And we're just, you know, right close one against the other, and the forklift couldn't really operate, and it was just a damn jam, you know. And then about as many cops came, and they were around, so it really created a real. And then the guys were singing like, "Send the grapes back, let the grapes rot." Women and children suffering in the fields, slave wages, all these things just kept shouting and shouting, you know. And it was then effective. I was there for 2 hours and three guys.
Well, we got agreements. I think the agreements that Dolores got, you know, would certainly held up a lot longer because the pressure was greater than the pressure we put on. But when we went up there in September and early October, we got agreements also. And they stuck by them for a while.
Okay? And then they went back, huh?
Because, yeah, they went back.
Who else picketed? Is this, that this, I mean, that's in Boston?
Boston?
Yeah.
Stay in, for about 2 weeks at the funeral market in, there in South Boston. And, we couldn't, like I said before, you know, Local 25 was the only one that operates in that admitted area. And they're the ones that the majority were not handling most of the, or none of hardly none of the graves. There were teams of soldiers coming from, I think, Maine and Vermont. And after 2 weeks of taking it there, which the wholesalers are the ones that are getting all the graves in the wholesalers are...
How long did you pick it there?
For about 2 weeks.
Why did you stop?
We went to the source, you know, where they taken the stuff to the source.
You were picketing what's the name of the guy?
Gilpin.
And you left him. You went to the source.
Right, because we didn't see any results in it, because the majority of the wholesalers were not union, and they were the ones that were carrying it to the small source. So we went to the small source. We can get them to cooperate.
And how long did you pick it?
The stores.
I'm talking about the producer or the dock, you know, the
terminal. About 2 weeks.
To every day?
No results.
How many pickets?
Just four.
Four?
Four, yeah. That was before
SPS. Michael Skinner.
You know, before the students. The students were in contact at the very end.
Well, we have an example for a guy, a whole bunch of people marched down the street, you know, and I just, why don't you tell us, in Denver?
We knew that we would have a difficult time bringing, there were so few of us in Denver who were active on the boycott.
Why don't you just tell us, you know, the march, very quickly.
We scheduled a demonstration to bring this boycott to the attention of the people who work in the Narva market, the produce brokers, and also we thought we could get enough publicity so that the chain store managers, the people who are involved in working in chain stores, would know that there was a boycott in the area of the Fresh Table Group. So we had a demonstration, and we called people from labor, from the churches, and from civic organizations, and students to march and have a demonstration on a given day, November the 6th. We started that demonstration at 6 o'clock in the morning, and through a hard telephone campaign and through going to meetings in the evening, union meetings and different meetings throughout the area, we managed to get 250 people At 6 o'clock in the morning, from 6 until 10, we had a demonstration. And that's, we were quite surprised because, we worked quite hard at it. We got people picketing there. We didn't have picket lines. We couldn't control the people. So they just started marching all over the Narva market. And they were... There was even one woman there, she had a baby on her back, and they were, this picketing everywhere, going on the docks and out in the street. And it was really uncontrollable.
And you were successful. That's, you were successful, were you not?
there was enough of a play there, enough of a flash, so that the brokers were surprised and shocked. So many people there, thinking when they have the farmer.
150, yes.
They were. For a follow up to Hoffman. They were very responsive and they wanted to help.
Who picketed with less than 10 pickets? You manually had four? Who else had a small number of pickets? Raise your hand.
At the warehouse?
No, at the terminal.
Some of you have.
You had?
Last time I had about 25.
When? Before Andy stopped you?
Yeah. No, after. Before I had five.
Oh, you only had five at the time, Andy. Well, maybe that's why Andy stopped.
Okay. Five. And you had how many?
Five.
And you had
eight.
And you had?
Eight to twelve.
You had to ten. Eight to ten.
With the exception.
Ah.
Eight.
Eight? What was this?
Yeah, in Oakland.
Oh, in Oakland. Now, how would it happen in your own minds if you had, say, 25 Delano pickets, 25 people from Delano, all going after this guy, plus... The heat that you generate because of your own numbers, you know. I mean, say you get another 25. But say you have 25, you can count on day in and day out.
Yeah.
What do you think would happen?
Okay. For one thing, that's one of the bigger problems that I had in Chicago in getting people out. You know, they said, whenever we say, you know, we're going out to the terminal at 6, they say, 6, you're crazy. You know, we'll come out in the evening to go to a chain store, but we won't come out that early. And they won't. But if we have 25 people that are consistent, and, you know, besides that, from what else we can get.
Yeah.
What would happen?
The town would put a beacon light of 25 people. I think there was not in sense because we put a beacon light on the street. And the police, they took us, you know, they say that was against the law. So we went marching. And I think that was expected that way, but the people, they, you know, they didn't work. They didn't want to stay too long. So that's why I think we can do nothing else. Because people, they didn't try to help us in the morning.
This is only the market? At the terminal?
I think it won't be no difference at all having a four people or having a 25 people or 100 people. So you run the picking lines in order. And I think you had 25 people, like Louis said, just let around like a wildcat all over, you know. I think that would be the most effective.
I know numbers work. Numbers, there's no question about it. When we were picketing in Toronto, when we picketed this wholesaler, the first night we had eight, and the guy was very gracious. He didn't mind if we picket. The next night we had 25, and the next night we had 50, and that guy was livid. He was mad. He came out and he asked me, said, "How many more are you going to get out here?" And then when we were talking to Jim, and Jim
what did he tell me? When he said, "How many more are you going to get down here?"
Well, and then he talked to Jim and he said, "Well, we'll send you a couple hundred people from Chicago." The guy practically blew his cork. You should have heard him. That did it. Believe me, that did
the numbers, Joe.
I believe that the number of people has a lot to do with whoever you're picking.
Did you pick any?
No,
because
I guess the
corporation
is the
post-of
retail. She wants to
handle the
warehouses.
So you had a
stop? Yeah, well, I mean, they, you know, told all their, you know, shop stores not to handle it, so they weren't going to be coming in there. And they're very strong in Vancouver, and if they want to stop them, they can. So that if they were coming in there, they wouldn't handle it.
I think that they could stop almost everywhere. Who had his pen up here? Yes.
Numbers are important, but it also seems to me, because we had small picket lines, relatively small when we picketed, that the aggressiveness of your picket counts too. Because, well, I'll give you an example. It's a little off because it's not terminal. But the store had a parking lot, and there's basically one-way cars could come in. I mean, they could sneak in around the back alley. We had people standing out at the entrance. And when the car walked in, you know, it's the same as at the packing shed, well, before. You just kind of meander across where the car's coming in, so he has to stop. You give him a leaflet, you talk to him. And those guys had turned around. Sure, some of them had come in. We had probably, what, 8 or 12 people at night. And then we had people all with leaflets. Everybody who was on our line had a leaflet at the store and hit everybody going into the store and talked to them. So I think numbers help, but it's the people, and some of the people we had on that line had never picketed before in their lives. And so they looked to us first and then, you know, did it themselves, and this is very effective.
Somebody has to hand out the job.
I'd like to say this. Have any of you people here in this room ever been picketed yourself? If you haven't, I'll tell you what I have. And if you see 4 people out there, you laugh. If you see 80, you start shaking and like, this is good people.
Where were you picketed?
Carmen and about 80 other ones used to picket in the Chula Vista.
Who had
another interesting thing? We were threatening to picket Acme. We kept it. How many people are you going to have? You know, we want to know how many stores. And the fact that and Penfruit wanted to know the same thing. And that's what they're afraid of. You know, they're afraid of a real lot of people. I don't think there's any question.
What would you do?
What
would you do? Say you had 25 or 30 of your own pickets.
Oh,
night after night. What? How would you escalate the thing?
Well, I think what I would do different. I wouldn't do it the way we did it in Philadelphia now. What I would do is concentrate on one store in a pretty good area, and then just until you got that guy so irate, and just keep hitting that same guy.
Are you talking about a distributor now?
No. Well, I would do a distributor the same way. But I think that's another mistake that we made in Philadelphia. We had about 45 people, and I dispersed them into about 40 stores, and I think it was a mistake. And another mistake we made was we picketed in a ghetto neighborhood, and in Philadelphia that's not a good idea because there's no place else for the people to go. There were a lot of people who said, look, I don't like this store anyway, but there's not another one for a mile. So that was another serious mistake we made. So we should have concentrated our forces and get one manager mad enough to call the main office. And and we finally did do that. But I think I still need to...
What's the difference in the reaction between picketing in the terminal and picketing in front of a grocery store? In other words, what happens is different.
It is, Jim.
Go ahead, man.
Well, I think at the terminal market, my own opinion is more easy to get to a person that's going to buy in the store than a person that knows that he's selling hot sauce and you're trying to get him to get it off.
Right.
And to talk to a person while you're either you're working at.
Right.
I
think a combination of both, you know, like you're
picking. Why is it easier to get to a guy going to buy grapes at a store, at a supermarket, than to get to a guy who's selling the grapes?
It doesn't make any difference if you buy those grapes or not. You get good
value. My question was, what's the difference in the effect? So what's the difference in the, in the atmosphere, you know, what develops there that...
Well, you're going to get sympathetic people if you're at a store, you know. You're just going to get people mad as hell at you out of the tunnel, it seems to me.
Which is most effective?
Well, that's
in terms of...
Well, I was thinking, how are we going to get Rosengarten? You know, I don't think Rosengarten would care if we had 2,000 people out there. He's been dealing with Jamar for 25 years. If we went to a place and Rosengarten couldn't sell those grapes, if we went to a store where Rosengarten sold grapes and he couldn't sell them, boy, he'd stop buying the damn.
Why did you think if he had 2,000 people he wouldn't care?
Told me that nobody's going to tell him what he's going to buy and what he isn't going to buy, and I could bring the whole city of Philadelphia out there and he wouldn't care. Now, he might care.
What was the largest number of people you had?
We didn't pick it yet.
Oh, wow.
We didn't pick it yet.
Bill, and then Michaels, and then Jeff.
Oh, I think it's very important to have a combination of the two, because you have a pick line down at the wholesale market that you're trying to get buyers not to go over there and buy. But certain ones do buy, and so they go to the store, they do the pick line there. But as soon as they get out with the grapes to their store, there's another pick line, and they have pick lines all over the place.
for different purposes, of course, you know. But they're getting hit everywhere. You know,
but how are you going to do it, though? You say you got 25 or 30 pickets, and they got to flee.
Yeah.
Well, you have to have a minimum amount of people in the central market. Then you have to go out and hustle people for the pick lines of the daytime on the retail stores.
Yeah, but it has never been done.
Well, it's up and down, you know. When you first start, you know, like we did.
Michael?
I think that the most, in my own opinion, that I feel that the most effective it is in the brokers. They do care about the amount of people they have, but also I think it's good to work also picking line in the timber market, also find that organizations or churches or any backgrounds of these brokers they have, and ruined his better reputation, and that's what mostly hurt him more.
Give him a bad reputation.
But you don't really hurt a guy by picking him out there at the terminal. Don't really hurt him.
But that's why you told me that you had the guy.
No, that's a different story. We were hurting that guy.
Well, then don't say just the terminal.
No. That was a wholesaler. That's a warehouse. People were coming there directly to buy. See, Rosengarten, he's really a distributor, this guy. Most of his grapes are not sold in Philadelphia. Most of his grapes are sold. They're trucked out by gypsies, we found out, into New Jersey and into Pennsylvania. And that's where most of his grapes are sold. 80% of Jamar's grapes in Philadelphia are sold to chains.
But so Rosengarten said he didn't care if he put a lot of figures there. Did you ever get that reaction from the guy in Toronto? You said that when there were eight there, the guy was very kind and very congenial.
But see, the thing is, what really hurt Culotta, people didn't buy the grapes. People wouldn't touch our grapes. Because we were standing there telling everybody that came in there, don't buy these grapes. Don't touch them. Everybody. And they'd come out and they'd say, we're not buying the grapes. He says he lost $20,000. I know. He didn't move a lug of those grapes the time we were there. It wasn't all the people. It was there were just more people there, and all these Italians were there.
These guys were buyers or consumers?
No, these were consumers. See, it just happened to be individuals that bought. These were just people that bought the grapes to make their own wine. I know the numbers had something to do with it. But see, you know what? I don't kid myself that the only way this guy is going to stop is if he's hurting. If he's hurting, he's going to stop. And so I think you just have to figure out a way to hurt him. Now, I just don't think all those people are going to hurt Rosengarten. If he can't sell some grapes, that's
going to and then Ed, and then John.
But just to what Jim was saying, he's saying, what's the difference between a store and the produce terminal? Well, in the store, you're going to pick your target, whereas you can do it in the produce terminal. You have to pick it where you are. And most of the guys that are buying there have a fair sized store, or at least a buying for a small chain. Now most of these guys are not the average, they're not consumers. Most of them are middle class. They don't give a damn to what you're doing because they're out there. They're going to make money from whatever they buy there. They're going to make money, and the guy that's going to a store isn't going to pick a time. They're not going to pick it either at a place where they're middle class.
You're talking about picking the store.
No, the difference between
I'm talking about the difference between the produce terminal and the stores.
Yeah, but a little while ago, you said that you thought that it would have been better to continue picketing there after Andy told you to leave and go to one. Uh-huh.
Well, see, what we were doing there, I think this was one thing that was wrong on our part, even though it was hard to get tickets out during the day because they mostly have to work. If it's students, they got to go to school, and if it's union people or if it's other countries, they got to be in the job. But anyhow, we have stayed there. See, it wouldn't have made much difference with the people we had. It would have made somewhat difference if we had more people.
Yeah.
Because you have about, in Chicago, you know, and this is going back to what Marco said, that to let them roam. If you have 25 people, you have a produce terminal the size of the one in Chicago. 25 people are going to get lost and, you know, easy. For 50 even. But I think we have to concentrate, and we had more people. We could hit more than one, because if we were hitting one guy in particular, then they could go 6 hours away. And, you know, then they wouldn't buy some quality, but then they would buy an M&B.
Michael?
I have a question on the strategy of picketing and doing both picketing at a service terminal and picketing the people who bought from that particular buyer. It seems to me, this is just, I've never done it, so I want to know if someone has, going to that fire, and you know that that guy is handling scat bricks, and just staying there with three or four guys with cars, and when someone comes in and just buys, doesn't matter whether they buy grapes or potatoes or anything from that fire, go and follow that buyer and picket his retail store. You know, it just caused a lot of noise so that he goes back to the merchandise or the wholesale jobber. Now, would this be effective or?
I think you're raising a very key question.
Well, I'm
going to note here so you won't forget.
If you can say something on that,
I think I can help answer that. We tried that Hunts Point Terminal Market in New York, and we followed the guy, briefly, we followed him around as he went from stall to stall for about 3 hours. And then he got very upset, because he wound up, either he called the police or he called his boss who called the police. But I think even if it worked, even if we were able to follow the guy out and follow him to a warehouse, there are very few chains that buy, in New York at least, there are very few chains that buy directly from the terminal market. And so they're small stores or they're wholesalers, and they lease the trucks very often. You can't tell by looking at the truck. The drivers won't cooperate. So I think that even if you follow one, you're gonna take one car and two or three people, and you're gonna spend maybe half a day, and you're gonna maybe account for very small.
You know, let me just to tie this in, because I think it's a very important point that you raised. Let me just refresh your memory. You remember in the Stanley boycott, a lot of work was done, and then what was the very last thing that broke the
distributor?
Yeah, what was the name of it?
His name, in San Francisco.
Is that Max Sobel?
No. I know.
Well, that's the guy, but it was a distributor.
Right.
Right. What broke Perry Manetti?
That we were going to boycott.
Well, there are a lot of work done, but the very last thing, when Tribuno said, okay, we're going to pull out, remember? This guy, also a distributor. That wasn't the only thing, but that was a distributor that got it. And also, what happened with the S&W boy tank. You remember? What was the name of that thing over in South Los Angeles?
I wasn't on that.
Who was on that?
That was their S&W
warehouse in Brent. Yeah. It was their own warehouse.
It was there?
They were the distributor.
They were the distributor, okay. So in three cases, we had the distributor being like the thing that broke them,
Yeah, but see, with Shenley, that was a situation where they had all kind of bottles of Shenley sitting right there in that warehouse that could not come out. And you take a guy like Rosengart, and they were telling me, I talked to a trainman in Philadelphia, what's happening with the wine grapes. They did something very unusual this year. This guy's worked there for 20 years. They took them to another place to unload them. Another thing that they're doing, they're not even unloading. They're going some point outside the city, and they're selling the grapes. The guy is picking the grapes up right out there. It never even gets into the...
Okay, let me put it this way.
So what do you
think? Let me put it this way. What one thing would you do, if I ask you, I will do one wish to get you out, what would you say to do?
A lot of people.
No, I'm talking in terms of one specific thing, Where do we stop the grapes if we're going to hit you? If we're going to make you out, like, call up tonight on the phone and say, look, we're going to... What? Where?
Supermarkets.
We're talking about one specific place, not supermarkets. One specific place.
Okay,
one supermarket?
Make the people who sell his stuff.
Okay.
Fine.
Who? Make who?
The people that he sells
his agents.
Guess who the his agents? Who's Rosengarten in Philadelphia?
Okay. We're talking about the distributor.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. Which one distributor?
There's only one in Philadelphia.
Right.
There's only one. He's exclusive.
There's six, seven, or eight. Is which Andrew one do you think would be the key?
Where's
Joseph
Creighton coming in?
What about I think we have to make a clarification here. I think we're talking about agents and distributors, and there's a difference, Like, Victor Joseph was the agent in New York for Jumara, but he was not a distributor, The grapes never came anywhere near him. He had an office out in the suburbs.
Yeah.
Now, the distributors were the people at Hunts Point, They were the wholesale distributors.
Now, if you want to be very specific, then you go after the agent. All right, but there's nothing like this, but there's nothing that says, you know, you can't, there's nothing that says, a lot of great schools in New York that never, that the Victor Joseph is not, they're not consigned to Victor Joseph. They can go, you know, they can go directly, they can be bought directly, and very often are bought directly by the, produce houses at Hunts Point.
Caesar?
So what would you take, the produce houses or Joseph?
I would take the produce houses.
Stopping that at the produce houses?
Yeah.
I have a question. When we're talking about the Mara grapes, are we talking only the ones on the label? Are we talking about each and every box of grapes that is carrying a label that we have on our scale list? Are we talking of all of them or just the Mara?
Well, right now we're talking about distributors. And which one distributor would be the key?
Are you talking about those people up there? In some cases, yeah. They may be distributors also, but in case of Victor Joseph, he's an agent.
Let's not talk about them as either distributors or agents, but they're persons who are
key persons, no?
Are they more key in each city? Who's more key in New York City than Victor Joseph? Is there anybody?
No, one person, no. No, one person.
Okay.
No.
To get back to Marion's point, you know, about Rosengarten, it seems to me, you know, I wouldn't care whether he's selling grapes or selling vegetables. Well, what other things do you sell besides grapes? Rosengarten. Okay. Well, why can't you just hit Rosengarten?
Even if you've got Rosengarten, 80% of the grapes in Philadelphia are in the chain. 80% of the grapes are in the chain. You get Rosengarten, you've got a small guy, really, literally. I mean, you've got 20%. You got Jamar's exclusive agent. You've got a guy that'll go to bat for him, probably. But if you want to get volumes of grapes, if you want to really get the grapes in Philadelphia, you get the chain.
Well, are you saying 80% of Jamar's grapes go to the chain?
80% of the produce in Philadelphia goes into the chain.
But what percentage of Jamar's grapes?
To Acme and Penn Fruit are buying. Well, Acme may have stopped.
So they go through the, through,
No, they go direct. They buy direct.
But you're talking about how many chain stores? Many of them, huh?
Oh, yeah, probably. Right.
So still the key guy, the one key guy, he would be more than the other person who represent more volume for Jamar.
I don't know. If you would pull off Acme was his single biggest. Acme bought more than Rosengarten would ever buy. Acme, he's loaded twice a week. He's getting two train carloads of grapes in,
There seems to me there's two elements that come in here. One is volume, but the other thing is personal relationship and, just how does the guy, do they talk to each other on the phone?
It's
22 years, like for Andrew, and it's so easy for A&P, who maybe for 10 years have had maybe 10%, and they jump back and forth. So easy for them just to go to Fresno. And I would say Andrews would be a lot more important, just because that personal relationship is like pulling teeth.
Because those buyers, for those stores, they're gonna buy from Jamar because Jamar's probably selling them cheaper than anybody else because he's having trouble selling them.
I think a third thing too is the prestige of the buyer in that market. And I think the Seattle, our experience here is a very good example, because I think one of the reasons that the smaller houses went is because they got the word, that Pacific Fruit and Produce agreed with us, and Pacific Fruit and Produce there is huge.
I don't know if this is playing. I have a couple of questions and clarification about that Pacific Fruit and Produce thing. But I understand they weren't handling the grapes anyhow, so. All they did was say they weren't going to handle it in the future, and that remains to be seen.
Okay, let's get back to the producer, to the distributor. Which one person in the whole United States would be more key? We know it's not going to be the key, but the most important.
What's
the
Jamar?
I think that Chicago, New York would be the key.
What are the figures there about percentages?
New York City, of all the cars of grapes released in California, out of 2,600 cars, 26,000 cars, approximately 5,000 go to New York City.
More than New York City.
Yeah.
Which is second?
Second was Toronto.
Toronto?
This is Albright.
Why don't you put this up here? Give us about eight of the cities. We'll get them tomorrow. Just on memory. So, say then that New York is the big key, you know, or more of a key than the others. Let's talk about how do we stop it. Put all of our information together and just give some ideas. How are we going to, say for instance, we said, are we going to go stop Victor Joseph? He's dead, you know, been dead for 15 years, but his son, you know, is coming in business. But say for instance, that we decided that Joseph is a guy. How are we going to stop him?
One question is he an agent or is he a distributor?
He's an agent. He's not a distributor. He has one office out in a suburb of New Jersey. He doesn't have any kind of a warehouse. He doesn't have trucks. He doesn't have any kind of stock.
But he handles Greg's stock in paper.
Paper, right.
Right. And so Greg that he handles from paper here at his desk become real grapes at some point somewhere, right?
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right, so we want to stop Victor Joseph. How do we do it?
Because he sells
too. You want to get directly to Victor Joseph and sit in his office?
Are we going to hurt him that way?
Why can't you get those guys one at a time?
Huh?
We're
talking about Victor Joseph, yes.
Yeah.
One at a time.
I mean, just put maximum pressure on him.
Well, what kinds of pressure would we put on him? Go on to the other.
Go to the organizations that he belongs to.
Okay, social pressure.
We work at his neighborhood.
Go to his neighborhood.
Yeah, right.
Pick at the market.
Pick at the market? Which market?
Wherever he has to be.
He doesn't have an office. He's the same kind of a guy as Bob.
Yeah, but he... But those grapes that he handles through paper in his desk become grapes at some point. So he does have grapes.
I mean, one other thing, clear, Caesar, he's not the only agent in New York. There's about four other agents.
But we're saying that he's the biggest one. Okay, fine.
The Teamsters in Portland advise him to make threatening phone calls every half hour through the night to Fred Meyer.
Threatening phone calls. Okay, ma'am.
I still put a lot of faith in the rails.
The rails.
You're talking about Victor Joseph, or you're talking about rails?
Victor Joseph.
I would say let's get all our forces together and mass picket. Right.
Joseph doesn't have he has an office with paper and no grapes around him. But at some point, those papers become grapes, real grapes.
You have delegations.
So we take it where?
Bug them all the time. Keep going.
Delegations to bug them and then mass picketing.
Yeah.
What kind of harassment?
Social harassment.
Sit in.
John, you have something else? Let's get hot here. Maybe we can do something. No?
This? Pocketbook.
How are we going to hit him with pocketbook?
Yeah. By getting the people that he sells to tell them they don't want anymore.
All right. He made us, I think, what we've been in the lane of thinking of. This has been thinking for about a couple of months now. Because it's, you know, after you get the big stores, it really, we may be wrong, but would you agree with me that it seems to us and these are the key guys?
Since October 3rd, those have been the person the Greeks have been consigned to. In other words, they have been the agents, and they may even turn Greeks over to
Kovacovic
in New York City. You know. But it never went from Edison to Kovacovic. It always went consigned to Victor Joseph. So, and then he unloaded them on.
Ed? bring you back to this great teaching. You said about, I put it that way, you said that the distributor handles other things.
Yeah.
All right, start from there.
Well, no, I was just...
Joseph, Victor Joseph, does he handle just grapes?
No.
All right.
Andrew, no, let's take Andrew.
No, let's take Joseph because we're Joseph here.
I don't know.
He handles other kind of stuff, we know that.
Yeah.
Put a general boycott on him? Of all the products he handled?
Why not? What would happen if we said...
It's illegal, isn't it?
We can't stop his blessing.
Why not?
Who says we can't? The quality of the secondary boycott. We're not covered under the MLB.
Not that.
Okay, hold it right there. Hold it right there. Don't let your thoughts get away from you. We had 18 employees? 11 employees at the peanut chair?
About
15 employees at the peanut chair that were covered by the NLRB. We have turned them. They voted and they are no longer a part of our union.
We have another one.
They belong to, and we have another one that's coming up.
No,
they belong to
Star Produce.
Star Produce. The peanut chair workers belong to a group called the, what is it?
International Union of Peanut
Butter. Edwin Sedler is the director.
Don't worry about that anymore.
Well, the idea is that we're going to go to court. The moment that we really don't want any workers that are covering the NLRA, then how can we be covered, you know?
We
don't have any employees now because some workers aren't considered employees.
But right now we are covered. Yeah?
Well, maybe we are, you know, but we won't be soon, very soon.
Well, then.
Oh wow.
One of the lawyers who talked to from the NLRB, NLRA said that it would be very interesting to see you use all these other kinds of tactics.
What?
Like the ones we've been mentioning, like what we've been mentioning here tonight, he said there was the way the situation stood, where we had some packing house workers, you know, he would have to take a complaint if it was brought. But if we get rid of the peanut shed, that kind of stuff, there's no problem.
We have other shed workers, but they're not covered by the board.
Do you mean what we would do is say, don't buy from Victor Joseph?
Yes. So now, for the sake of this discussion, say that we're not covered. And our contention is that the hell with the board, and we're going to go all the way out. Okay.
So then what we say is don't buy from Victor Joseph, period.
Don't buy what?
Don't buy for the picket sign.
What else?
How about buying some radio time?
Find out, maybe grapes aren't something, but maybe these carrots do come right into there, and maybe we know who buys those, and when we go to them, if they don't buy anything,
Paul Heaven would get in front of a Kroger store, we say with a big sign, don't buy, this is a scab store, don't buy grapes here. Or don't buy anything here with a big scab sign.
We can't do that.
We can do that if we don't have it.
No, but you missed what Cindy was talking about the peanut chip. The reason we couldn't before was because we were covered on the NLRB.
Forget about the board. Forget about the board. Don't worry about the board.
You mean say don't shop the rock?
Right. Well, what would happen here?
I think if we took the same tactics, disregarded the secondary boycott, and used the same tactics against people who are most likely to be his customers, such as Hunt's Point. Because if the only way that Victor Joseph handles grapes or carrots or oranges is on paper, and there's just too many things you can do with them, you know. They can use another name. So you say to a buyer, okay, I'm not going to buy from Victor Joseph. He turns around and buys from Kovacovic. He's just still buying the same stuff. But if you had the same picket line and you put the same pressure, with a primary picket line on the buyers at Hunt's Point and the front of the supermarket, then I think you'd have it.
You have him how?
Well, I think as a primary picket line would be, which is very effective.
Except now, still, that the auction becomes something that is still important to Victor Jones, isn't it?
The auction?
The auction. Yeah, it's important because I think it's the last outlet, you know. If you can't sell them on the rail between Delano and New York, he's putting them in the auction.
But it's most important because there's nobody between him and the retailer. He gets everything he sells there, he gets profit. But he doesn't have any jobbers.
He gets profit no matter who he sells it then.
No, but not as much profit because the other ones he has jobbers and distributors in between.
Yeah, but I think if that stuff goes into fruit auction, sometimes it's handled by tobacco and junk.
Yeah, I know. But Victor Joseph, I don't think, would just want to have his name erased from the fruit auction and be unable to sell citrus or anything, you know. I think that would disturb it.
Coming to that thing, saying that we stand in front of Kroger and say, just don't buy at this place, that's got, you know, well, that's precisely what they're doing, and, you know, like, let's take the, what do they call it, Bread Basket in Chicago, you know, which is, it's over, I'm starting the Christian Leadership Conference. What they do is they go to the stores, and they pick at those places and tell them, you know, don't go into this goddamn store until they sign a contract with us, you know, this contract stipulates that they are going to get more jobs to Negroes, and they are going to create more opportunities for them. But then, you know, you can call them a labor organization, and since we wouldn't be covered under the boycott provision, we can also stand out there. And when we felt pretty sure, you know, like, for instance, in a Negro neighborhood, and that's what we did, whenever we felt pretty sure, you know, that we would just tell the people, just don't buy at this store, you know, because we told them, don't buy grapes. I said, okay, I won't buy grapes, and they go into the store, and the guy's not being hurt because he's buying 2 or 3 lugs or 10 lugs of grapes he's selling a week. That's not going to hurt him. So we're going to tell them, just don't buy in this damn store, go some other place. Now that's going to hurt him.
You know, I have people...
Okay, we're talking about Joseph, And he says that he has, you know, like grapes, potatoes, tobacco, citrus, cherry, tomato, and all the other stuff. And we're not worried about the board.
I think we should pick up the 2 or 3 or 4, whatever, of his best and sellers, some of his biggest products, instead of, you know, saying we're going to go out and tell... hang out a list of 20 or 30 things that the guy's handling. Instead of the 3, maybe he would have 4 or 5 that would sell more than all 30 combined. You know, he sends them to go
through. I think we're a combination of 2 things. So here, social pressure on
this is the paperwork here, right? He sells grapes by paper. He never sees the grapes. But somewhere along the line, that paper becomes, those 3 become real grapes, and then at the same time, they become real money, right? Right, so what happens if we're to turn loose on Joseph?
But then you have to find out that somewhere along the line he does have a grape in the auction, and he handles citrus in the auction. I've seen the citrus on the floor there, so, and it's consigned to Victor Joseph. So.
I think what he does, at least the way he explained to me, is Joseph gets a car. Jamal sends cars to New York, and sometimes not even sold. They use the box cars as a refrigerated storehouse on wheels, and they put them headed east. Maybe this tonight they sent the cars. Well, tomorrow Joseph will call because I want 3 cars. So instead of going to Kansas City, they divert them to New York to Joseph. Now, Joseph has 4 days to play around to sell those 3 cars, and by the time they get to New York, maybe he sold 2 of them. If he couldn't sell one, then that one goes to the auction. The auction offer they can't sell, you know. So, but he's selling. All right. So say that the 2 cars that he sent, out of the 3 cars, 2, the grapes, huh? Well, 2 of them were sold 2 days before they got to New York. They were sold to the stalls at the market here. So what happens if we begin to harass these guys and they stop buying? Who would get hurt?
Joseph.
Right, and then Joseph, and then Jamal, right?
Yeah,
so could we get to Joseph that way?
Yeah, the problem is we
have to get enough of them.
Yeah, the problem is finding out who's not going to be hurt by one gone. How do you find out who these people are?
Oh, we know. Well, that's the answer.
They're just a sample for just one man, you know. But when he's gone, they think it's not only one man, it's one man.
No, we're talking about, you know, getting into Jamal. We don't say just consign ourselves to one or restrict ourselves. We want Joseph, so we don't care what to do with him. We're just getting him. Could that be done?
Why not?
Well, the problem.
So we get him to the point that he said that we would say, all right, we'll take the pressure off if you get Jamar to meet with the union. Do you think we could get it?
I believe it can be done, but it isn't going to be done with one or two persons working in one given city. It's got to be with a great number of people.
An army.
No, not an army, but...
how many is an army?
An army would be at least in between 25 and 30 people.
Instance, 25 and 30 people?
Say all the trucks are up there loading at 3 o'clock in the morning, You have to find out where those grapes are going. This is the thing with Rosenberg that Frank and I tried to do. We tried to find out this very thing. Where are these grapes going, so we find out they're going way out somewhere in west Pennsylvania or something. And just a simple matter of finding out who they're going to, being out there every day, following those trucks, seeing what stores they're going to. But, that's a very big bunch of information we don't have. Now, do other people, how did you get the information?
How do we get him? How do we get Joseph? How do we stop him? I think that's the key.
Two things we're talking about. One, he sells grapes at auction, and he also sells to other people on consignment. Can we ever find out who he's selling to?
That's what I mean. That's how you find that out.
I don't know. I think if he's selling, we should be able to find out, yes. We keep our eyes open and should.
How? But, that's awfully
hard. I don't know how, but we should,
See, if they do it on paper.
Well, we'll burglarize his office to find out, or something.
Yeah.
Okay. I know they gave me an assignment to go to New York. I'd be damned if I wouldn't find out in a little while. In fact, I say I could go to New York myself and start building.
Good. I might propose that as a very good idea. We raise that money to send Cedar to New York and stop.
Okay, you guys go on a vacation to Acapulco. Yes.
But getting somebody to work in is, who get a job in his office.
Just two people on
the line. All right, everything you say goes on the tape, and we're going to get the tape and go through it and get all the ideas. So just pull them out here. We want your ideas, brothers, over there, back there.
Wiretap.
Put everything in there. Just put everything in there.
This is something we could have found out in the tasters, but, remember when I talked to Greenberg about this? He could have given us that information like that, but he's not going to do it, He knows who those
guys are. But he might give it to somebody else.
Yeah. Well, that's true. To find
who's Greenberg?
Greenberg? He's the president of the Teamster local that works with the road guard.
And he could tell us.
If we could get somebody, it'd be very simple, really, find out who are road guard's account. And boy, you could hit us.
We're saying. Stop at nothing. Stop Joseph.
Find who his big customers are.
All right.
Okay.
So, how do we get this guy to give us the information?
Does that include dropping a nonviolent pledge?
You don't have to be violent. Money is not violent.
He knows.
At least you know.
Yes.
You can pay people with it here.
just thinking off the top of my head, I'm very enthralled to the idea of harassment. Maybe not completely stop, but harassment on the rails. With the ice pack, they make, I think it's two stops before they get there, and there's always continual checking of the refrigeration units, and even one Teamster offered to give us some ideas and even some help if we wanted to start doing things. I don't know, how this would be worked out, but it seemed like even a couple of days. Now, I know that there have been boxcars going to sidings, and they go down south, and they get lost, and refrigeration units are turned off, but it seems like, I never thought it out at all, but some kind of harassment on the supply line. If you could just delay it a few days, just like that.
Would it be so, too, with the window cold? One way I found out in Montreal, I was having a hell of a time. I just went down to the yard. Just went down to the railroad yard and watched the trucks, as they were unloading. And, I got this guy, he didn't know what the hell was going on. He just let it look at his bill to see who in the heck the guy was buying from, where he was taking those freight. That's a good way to do it. And, we have a railroad contact in Philadelphia who says that all grapes that go anywhere on the East Coast go to a place called Potomac Junction or Potomac something or other, right outside of Washington, D.C. And he said right there at that point, they know exactly where those cars are going. And he seems to know somebody over there. So you could find out, you could pick New York, Joseph, find out right now Potomac Yard, get your key guy there, and they would know a day before the thing...
Potomac Yard in Washington?
It's called... I have it written down in my notes.
What did that guy say again? All the grapes that come east?
All the grapes that go east of a certain point. Anyway, they go to New York. Yeah, it goes through... Yeah, it goes through this place called Potomac something or other. That's what he said.
What about stopping Joseph?
Well, you might try approaching his secretary. She belongs to a union. Perhaps there are union people who can speak to her and try to get that information.
Well, social pressure can be good, too, on him, because he belongs to and his house.
Well, they got a meeting with him, you know. They got a meeting with Joseph, and he called Jamala, and we thought that...
embarrass him in front of his peers.
They got him. They got him to have a meeting with Dolores and the cab driver. Well, then what happened? And I think the way that we got them was we went to the Jewish rabbis and we said, look, you help us with the Manischewitz wine. This guy's Jewish. Unfortunately, it doesn't belong to any temple, you know. And I said, hey, you got to help us. And I said, I can't take no for an answer. You guys, you got to find a way of doing it. If you want social justice for front workers in this country, for the poor people, you get this guy. In 2 days, they got a meeting. You know, they went to work and they got him. But we had an argument with him when we met at the temple with about 6 or 7.
Figure out a way to subpoena his record.
We said, we don't want any excuses. If you can't give us a meeting with him, then you're not ready for social justice. You're not just bluntly, you know. And I said, I might as well waste my time with you. They were embarrassed. I said, all we're asking is a meeting. And they got, I don't know how they did, but they got a meeting. You know. But it's not enough, you know.
But what happened? That's what I'm trying to find out. What's
the meeting?
No, yeah, but what was the final result? Nothing?
Well, he called Jamara. No, first he said, well, he wanted me to call him, so I was in Boston or someplace, and I called Joseph. And he said that, I told him, you know, that he was like an innocent bystander. You know, as long as you're buying the grapes, then we're going to go after you. We don't want to do it, but we have to meet. You know why. This is what I understand. I said, look, if you get your mind to meet with the union, then we'll think very seriously of, you know, releasing the pressure. He said, well, it cost me money, and I sold 50% less grapes this year than last year. And I've lost a lot of money. He said, I don't want... He said, everything... I deal with unions all over the place. So all of my employees are under contract. And I said, why don't you call tomorrow? He said, okay, I'll call him. So he called tomorrow. Then he called Dolores and told Dolores, at least for Dolores for me, that for me to call tomorrow. So I got on the phone and I called tomorrow. You might want to talk to him. But what Jamara apparently told Joseph was, well, Joseph said that I had called him. The sheriff called me and told me, you know, a lot of things about my business and grace. So Jamara, after we got the thing cleared out, Jamara had, according to Joseph, Jamara only said, well, anything the child wants to tell you, he should tell me, you know. So the interpretation was that he called Jamara because he wanted to have a meeting.
What about using the other three? John said that there were four agents. What about using the other three to play him off against to get some information about this guy? That works. It could work. I mean, they might not like him enough to...
What else? What happens if you hit him the same way you did it there and concentrate on that guy?
What?
What happens is the way you did it, you know, about these people that got you to meet with this guy.
Uh-huh.
Well, what happens if we concentrate on him?
The rabbi?
Yeah.
And concentrate where? On Joseph?
Yeah, they have the rabbi, the
keep working on it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And other people.
That's what they're doing,
yeah. People, yeah.
And other people, that's what they're doing now. But see, there's nobody in New York. Incidentally, for the last 4 days, so Jamar knows that we're all back in Delano. He's been sending very small grapes than usual. Then he asked in the past month or so, I mean, days, yes.
That there must be some way to provoke Victor Joseph to some kind of violence towards one of us if you give us some good.
He's dead.
I think if we could figure out a way to subpoena the records, you know, we could get somebody to say, no, really. I think that might be a possibility. You could get somebody to say something unfair, or I don't quite know what.
Some other union.
Yeah, a union, something.
I was going to turn back to the other. If Victor Joseph sells the auction, he has to eventually, you know, let's say he's got a surplus and he has to sell an auction. How does one go around picketing an auction? I really don't know. Do you picket it or do you harass it? Or how does it operate?
In New York, they operate, they float the cars across the river on barges, on car barges.
They float the cars
yeah.
across the river? But who controls the barges?
That's by you.
Oh, yeah?
Who was it? And then they're unloaded there by, in New York, by the ILA, International Longshoremen's Association. And there they're handled by the teamsters.
Yeah. Well, what happens during an auction?
The auction, the sub's unloaded in the evening, and then it's out on the floor usually by 2-3 o'clock in the morning. The buyers come in usually between 5 and 8, and the auction is between 8:30 and 9:30. And there's two different auctions: one for the citrus fruit, and one for the citrus. But it's very seldom goes at a higher. It's usually a lower. They usually get less for their fruit there than they do.
They can sell them if we bring it to them. Now, can you get near those graves?
You know something I
could do? Could you tell a sign that say, warning all buyers, don't buy this cab grave?
Yeah, well, we went through that, you know, for about 3 weeks. And the same thing is true there. They don't have their own trucks. You can't tell by looking at the trucks where it's going. And again, usually most of them small lots, same as it is at Hunts Point.
No, but my question is not finding out who buys it, but the buyers know that you're there.
Yes, yes.
You know, it's not a question of you know who the buyers are. The question is they know that you're there.
Who we are, what we're going to do, yeah.
You say you're going to, you know, threatening to pick up those grapes where they go.
Yeah, we did.
It didn't work?
No.
Caesar?
It didn't work?
No.
How many did you have?
We had 125, a couple of them.
And it didn't work, huh?
One of the things that just occurs to me is why these guys are so important. As soon as the grapes leave Diamara and they're consigned to anybody on that list, anything that happens to those grapes legally, technically, is their loss. Those are no longer Diamara's grapes. So that at any time that a barge sinks, it's not Diamara's loss, it's one of these guys' loss. And they can't afford the loss nearly as much as Diamara because Diamara is sending out 2,000 of these. And they're only receiving maybe 500 over a long...
Yeah, but they won't buy any more, you know.
Fine. If they don't do that, that's...
So they won't buy any more if something happens, right?
Right.
So anybody if the trainmen tell us he's consigned to Victor Joseph ever since October 3rd. Everything that went to New York City is consigned to him. That he is more important than whether or not he handles the grapes or not. He stands to lose more than anybody else in the city of New York.
Then these people, he gets permission out there and he not put up any money out of his pocket and he sells the grapes, then he just gets commission. Same thing like Yufenben only does just Gemara send the grace and after the sales then he gets the commission out of it. So Yufenben is not gaining anything.
It's just like a car dealer, you know. If anything happens to those cars while they're in the lot, it's the loss of that guy. Even if they're on the road, they're confined.
The broker or Gemara?
Yeah. The broker.
Jim, from what I understood in Chicago was that, like you say, when it leaves, Jamar is no longer responsible for that. But until it gets to the broker himself, the railroad is responsible for it. And we had one case like this in Chicago where a carload, for some reason or another, was spoiled. And when it got into Chicago, they had to reimburse Jamar for what his grapes would have brought that day in the auction. And they themselves auctioned the grapes off at 50 cents a box. But Baltimore did not do it. The railroad did it because it happened while it was in their care.
Well, I think
what happened again?
It would have
for some reason or another, right there was grapes all spoiled and rotten. And the railroad auctioned off the grapes at 50 cents a lug. And they had to reimburse Jamar for whatever his grapes would have brought that day if they had arrived in
good condition. If you had a beef with Victor Joseph and they were public, and any way that the train company could relate the fact that something happened to those grapes to the fact that you know that they're going to Victor Joseph, and Victor Joseph stands to lose.
Right, because the railroad isn't going
to. Well, I talked to the Freeman, Freeman's buying directly. And I asked him the question, what happened to two of these cars that would get lost, or they get rotten grapes, or frozen grapes, or something like this? He said, well, we don't lose nothing, Mr. Jamar is the one who loses.
No.
Not if there's anything that the train company could hang the hat on, that would, any way that they would be able to say that, because you were in a fight with Supreme, you went out and did something to the grapes, or something happened. And if they can relate it to that, well, then the train company can push it off on Supreme and say, you know, it's their problem.
Why can they push it over on Jamar?
Well, sometimes they do this, but it depends pretty much on what I understand from, you know, McCarthy is that if they can show that it's related to something out the other end, you know. In other words, Victor Joseph is really part of the whole Jamar mess. Then, and you've got we're talking about almost a labor dispute with Victor Joseph here. They could pin it on him, you know. The railroad company will try to push it off on him. They'll try to push it both ways. But,
Jim, isn't it true that once the brakes are unloaded, and consignee has been assigned that those grapes belong to the consignee and not to Jim. Number one, automatically.
So why can't the consignee
come out? No, they belong to Victor Joseph. They belong to Victor Joseph.
The consignee.
I was talking to Pete Velasco, and he used to be foreman of Carrick, and he said one method to use is to put them on the rails and then try to sell.
That's what they do. Most of them do that. They put them on the rail.
Roll your stock.
Yeah. Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah. We're going to take about a 5-minute break. I see some of you are getting sleepy.
I think you're the one who's getting sleepy.
Okay, we'll take a 5-minute break and then we'll come back, huh? Hold your good points because we're going to put them in the tape.
Of the product of demand, the source, we could also use that to say, well, you know, then also don't buy this particular brand of lettuce or this other kind of gas.
Well, can you do that, though? Can you pin it down to definite labels?
Well,
Joseph's label, for instance.
I think it's very easy to know which one of them are his main labels.
The label
he handles, you know.
We could do it. The convenience do it. They're covered by an LRV, you know.
Yeah, well, they go ahead and say,
although they go to
New York, they're going to take a lot of letters, you know. they can go out there and also give a call to our chain store, and then they're probably going to go into the meeting to do the same thing every day. Well, you know, the guys are out here, and, you know, they don't want to buy anything.
Could we ask the union to do the justice? You know, what we would like to do is circulate letters and things like that to all their particular ones in the food industry, and the meat cutters and the retail clerks and the teachers and things like that. Who would be willing to do this? Can we say, you know, Victor Joseph is handling scams, ask all these people not to mind the Joseph. Now, they're covered by an LRD. Can they do that? Can we ask them to do that?
They can ask them. They're not going to get the final secondary voice again because they go up to the store and say, well, look, this guy's a sort of
clerk,
and
you can ask them to do that. It's just a legal strike, you know, and we don't have any strike. I'm just asking questions. Can we do it?
Did we? I don't see what the unions can say it, you know.
What else? Does Joseph handle a whole slew of other products not produced by Jamar?
Oh, yeah.
All of these not produced by
Jamar? If he's anything like Bobby, you know, he walks into Bobby's office, he's got it in the wall, you know, plastered all kinds of all the labels that he is making for in this area. And, you know, the thing is, you know, he's got there that he can use that one county, which I think is Bobby's biggest town. But I think the U.S. and unions, let's say, like, this guy would handle tomatoes, lettuce, and potatoes, and all this kind of crap. Okay, we're going to go to the meeting, we're going to ask the members not to buy it. The first thing that unions are going to start jumping about is retail clubs, you know. You're going to hire a member.
Yeah, what if Victor Joseph handles Heinz tomatoes? Hey, that's it. Now, do we want to get in a position where we're boycotting Heinz tomatoes? I mean, we could.
But does that... I don't think any of these cases, really, with any of those names on it, we're going to run into that. There's different brokers that handle things in particular, like Tangerine.
Oh, we're not talking about hitting Joseph in the country, hitting all the other things that he handles.
I'm just saying Joseph handles about four or five in citrus, several kinds of citrus, and grapes,
and the idea is to hit those other things too.
Does he handle all the other brands? Does he handle something like Sunnyhills, which is known that people have a lot of money invested in?
Yeah.
One of the reasons why
is that important?
Well, Pacific Fruit, it seems to me, got upset about our boycotting their snowboard label because they advertise it, and it's a valuable property for that reason. They've invested money in it.
No, not by Joseph. Why would it be important to sell citrus?
Because
bananas. Okay, tell yourself to get a banana. How would that be important? What difference does that make?
Well, we're going around asking people not to buy
the bananas,
right?
It's not a consumer boycott. I thought we established the fact that this is not a consumer boycott.
Okay.
It never has been.
No, but the point is that the
I don't understand why it makes any difference what kind of labels they have.
Well, but just to the point that I said, which is again, if we're going to ask people that if we're going to put pressure on what this guy is selling, then what is he selling? He's selling cheetah bananas, he's selling red king, and
the cheetah banana people, if we put pressure on cheetah banana, then the cheetah banana people are going to put pressure on him to do something about Jamar so we'll get our cheetah bananas back. Yeah, but that's just a tiny, tiny drop in the bucket. Because there's thousands and thousands and thousands of those big chains. Stores.
Well, I don't know.
15 guys selling grapes from Joseph. He doesn't begin to scream. He means buying grapes from Joseph.
Yeah.
And she stopped him, and they, he really began to scream. He gave it to me. That was one of the reasons.
And
he
went to New York.
New York. And I'm not going to be
done. Well, then,
it can be done in New York. No, I mean, it can be done in all of the other areas.
The
it can be done. But see, we discovered here tonight that there was no sustained picking of the market. No one picketed at the same drive of the market, right?
Well, that's just because why didn't the picketing resume then? The answer is very simple. We didn't have, maybe we didn't have the big enough numbers to keep on picketing day after day after day for maybe a month if necessary. But what happens if all of us go, say, for example, to New York or Chicago? If we have to, we could even picket 15 hours a day, you know. Just keep the pressure on and on and on. So if we have somebody to help us picket, sure, he'll help us for 2 hours and then they go home. You see what I'm driving at? We need to...
Well, I know the answers. I'd like to get the answers from you, but we're getting some answers here. You know, it's obvious that some things are...
Well, are they 15 buyers that that she saw back there? Are they the main ones that he sold to?
Just great.
Yeah.
But God knows how well he sells, so he must sell to all of them different things.
Yeah, but by putting pressure on for how many days? 2 or 3 days?
Yeah. No, actually, it was only two picketing days.
2 picketing days. He was able to really stir them up. Well... they went back to those 15 with, you know, with a lot of people and, with, you know, with our people. So, well, they continued doing what she started to do.
Right? What would happen if you went and you say, you took this guy, has grapes. These three don't have grapes, but they have potatoes and something else. And we pick at them anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And we say, what kind of chicken women? Grapes? And we say, yeah, but you buy from the stinker Joseph, you know.
Yeah.
What would happen? Then we want you to stop buying everything from them. Don't buy anything. What do you think would happen?
I think would happen two things. One is they go to hell. I mean, I try to be like, oh, you, and you just don't understand me. He could just tell us to go to hell. And another hand, he could just tear it. It's too, stop buying from him.
You think he's not telling you to go to hell if he's getting hurt?
Well, he's, since he's not having given us grace, so he's not having grace at all.
Yeah,
and we still continue to pick it. I think the proof that he was there, he knows he's going to have to hit him back. But the first thing he's going to tell
us. You think you can't stop really? Picketing as buyers, what you've done is you've multiplied your problem of finding who those people sell to and into their retail outlets.
That's the thing that they understand. And that's the thing apparently we don't understand. We've got to understand this before we can even go. Let's just understand this before we go anywhere else.
Give me the...
Let's understand that, because if we don't, then we're not speaking the same language. Let's talk a little bit about that, you know. I think anybody understands that.
So what about this? Everybody has said, and we all know, that we can't get the labor support and so forth to go down to these buyers early in the morning. Is that right?
Well, pretty tough.
Yeah, pretty tough. So say that the bulk of our tickets that we send back go down here in the morning. And then there's a small group, and we work on labor and everybody else that we can get, and get a force to go out where Joseph's office is, during the day or, you know, at a time when other people can go and raise holy hell out there. So in the morning, real early in the morning, you're down here doing this, and some other time of the day, with the help that we get from the community, we're out raising hell at his office.
But, see, if you were to concentrate all your time, every bit of your time, you know, to nothing, you know, but blindly going like the Lord does it, you know. She just puts on her shutters like this, and she goes directly in a straight line. You could get anyone. You could get, what's his name? The guy in Detroit.
Andrew Brothers.
You get him, you know. See, he generates power, and that's the thing we understand, because no one else can go to hell if you have that power. And how are you going to get power? No, you know. Look at him. There's a few other things that have to be done.
Yes.
See, because you can't tell me that he's not going to go to hell, he's not going to do it. Forget about it. If we have enough power, he's going to do it. So you can tell me we don't have enough power, and I'll say, fine, it's true, we don't, you know. But he can't tell me that he's not going to go to hell not to do it, because he's not, you know. So how do we generate that power, you know? Do you agree with me that we have enough power we can throw this guy down?
Sure.
Okay, so now how do we generate the power?
Yeah, I wonder about that. I can see it getting support from the locals in the community, you know, thinking maybe we'll find a place with him, even though it's not a great kind of ball, but I can't see that the women are going to be out there taking, you know, any place to...
Oh, no one's going to do anything for us. We cannot blame anyone except ourselves. If we fail, we cannot blame anyone except ourselves. Because that's the way it stands, you know. If labor is a bunch of fogies and, you know, they're fat and they're not fine, you know, still there's no reason, you know. Really, you know, we can't blame labor, we can't blame anyone, too. We can't blame anyone except ourselves.
Power, you know, we have a power. that much now, may as well,
Now, I can't say if we don't have a single case of labor power. And I think that we're not jeopardizing our position in any way. We can still use that, even though we can follow this strategy. We can follow both strategies at the same time. Now, as far as the produce market terminal, I haven't seen any labor support. You know, even though maybe some, like in Cleveland, some of the teams have sent telegrams, but I haven't seen
any other. That was primarily what it was in New York City, was labor support, because those are taxi drivers are all thinking.
Yeah, when you talk about labor support, man, generally when you say labor support, you mean there were some mega unions, but in Trayvon's Wanda, there were primarily two groups. There was people from the Puerto Rican Union in Bronx, and there was the taxi drivers. And they raised enough dollars to $15. There's only one union out of about 250 active unions in the city.
Yeah, but that was ticketing. What I'm talking about is how people call up and...
That's power. We're talking about power, man. Power. If you don't understand power, we can't move until we understand power. Calling and power. We better get together on power.
That's more power.
Well, we don't care.
As long as all those telephone calls didn't stop the thing.
We don't have a power. What is going to create that power to stop that guy? Turn him off.
When we don't have enough support anymore from the business table in San Francisco and the terminal, me and Pip Blasco went and see Mr. John McBride, I think, John R. McBride is the president of the Warehouse Union. And he advised us, he told us, we increased that the key point of this is must be stopped right there. He told us, when you stop him, it's the part of the stuff carrying the hot bread. And when you get the coffee, just stop right there and stop the tire. If you can do that twice, the company who owns that stuff will never carry the hot bread.
Listen, Pablo, I mean, I feel that she was going to say, like, why got into mayors there and race and all out of this guy? And we'll present the case to the unions. I think the unions, then they have to make a decision because once they remember that you would get hurt. And I think they would push him hard enough that either they say, well, a member's going to get hurt, or either we put the president in those graves. And I think that is part of the power, isn't it? Well, it worked very well at Goldberg's.
We're already talking that we've got the numbers. Then we're trying now to figure out. We have the numbers, so we're trying now to think of how we're going to generate the power with these numbers, right?
No, we're trying to see, because two or three people have said, well, he'll come to go to hell, he won't do anything. Mm-hmm. And we can't even begin to discuss how to take care of a guy if in our minds, we think he's going to say no. When we go there, our minds may ask, we're going to get it. We don't care how, when a group comes back to New York, who marries in that group, and you don't get Joseph, then there's something very, very wrong, Either you didn't work, you grouped off, or you just weren't, thinking. But it seems to me, that you could get it.
With power.
Yeah, you got common sense, and a hell of a lot of hustle, because that work, day and night, just pushing and pulling and tugging and thinking and actually out in the picket line, doing whatever has to be done. But see, we get this generated, and then we all agree that if we got that, we'll make the guy fold. Right? Then we can talk about the matter about Joseph and demand for this.
But there's no means that somebody tell you to go to hell if you want to go away. They told us to go to hell too in Boston, stop and job. And we didn't go away. We told them that we have power, how we did, like Freddy teachers,
to have a mine only one place, and I think this is one of the problems that happens to everybody in a boycott. They will look at the brother this way, and they put it somewhere, and another brother go that way, and we'll turn around and finally we don't get none of those. We just figure out many places, that's what we do.
But if you don't concentrate, then you can't, you know, it's like a little drill trying to bore through something. If you prick here and there and everywhere, you'll never get anything done, you know. But you find out which is the most sensitive part, and you go after it, you know. You'll get it, and she'll get it. Now, if you put in the basis of it, I don't get it, then you know, I'm a failure. If I can get this done, I'm a failure, then you'll do it. Your mind's made up, but that's got to be done. Nothing's more important than that. Well, you did it up in Toronto, wasn't it? But you didn't use the same tactic in Philadelphia.
No, I didn't.
Right, you didn't. Right. If you had done it,
I know.
You know. And all the way back in Delano, we weren't there, but when he got to me, they went, you know, that detail, but I took 10 seconds, you know, and I dealt with what's happening. He just had, you didn't have that power, you had that power on him, you know, you were really choking him.
What happened to the power in Los Angeles? I would like to ask. To the power that they were using,
no, there was no power.
No.
I mean, it could have been power, but there's a highly sensitive spot, and I didn't let Fred and Bill really go at him.
I think we went after him in quite a way because.
But you know, we had a bathroom. We really had a bathroom. No, for instance, in New York, we said, go to them, you know, and fill out the afternoon, just do whatever you want to do. And the only place was in Los Angeles that no, the very sensitive spot.
Okay.
Well, it's very sensitive because of the, they were involved in negotiations and, you know, you just can't, we can't, you know, at a certain point we have to be responsible too. We were negotiating with Sandy, and they came, you know, somebody even came and tried to, you know, try to raise hell with Sandy, but we're negotiating, we'll become involved. But there are negotiations now, I think. No, it's different. You know. It was sort of a principle, you know. We got to study down principles.
The 30s will be down to 31st.
When will they be done? At the moment they're out of negotiations, they're going to get it.
The contract is due the 31st.
But you're going to have a little principle once in a while.
So that,
you know, I'm sure that the LA would have caved.
No,
sure?
What you were talking about, during the thing in Toronto, everything that I did up there was completely against the two union people that were with me. And was trying to get me to do exactly the opposite of what I was
right.
doing. And so I don't know, as far as
you can go. No, see, when something is done like this, you feel it back in the lane. You get a, just a report gives you a, you know, a feeling of you're on the right track, you know, you're on the right beat, and you're cracking.
Well, I really think, I think I know what you're doing for what else you're doing, but it's a matter of you're right, it's being pushed. You're doing it, you're doing it, like, I think you find out what you do once you start doing something.
You know, it's like we used to, in CSI police brutality cases. And Alicia used to say to him, Ray, you know, you become a friend of the chief police, you know, and you can't be effective. You know, when someone's there with Chief Blackmore, the first time we went there, we registered the county clerk. In those days, they wouldn't let Mexican Americans be deputized, you know, to register voters. So the first time that I met him, I was successful, I think. But I didn't know him. I said, how will I get anything I had? But it seemed so good, you know, in later years, you know, we became friends with the you become friends if you go to their homes, you know, but you go to see a few police every week with a complaint, you know, and you argue and you fight with them. Well, after you've been there 30 times or 50 times, you sort of friends, you know. You know, you've been there all the time, you know, and it has psychologically a lot of effect. So the same thing happened to you with the union leaders, you know. But you did exactly the opposite over there in Toronto with it, and you were successful, you know. And I think that's why the Lois is so successful and its power play. But he's just like a bulldog. She'll just, you know, just since she won't let you go until you got a cave because everything becomes secondary. She makes up her mind and she goes after and just, that's all she sees is just that, and that's the most important thing. And anybody, anywhere within radar distance from her, you know, has to get involved with her to do that, you know. You've got to, I mean, it's difficult, sometimes kind of difficult to work with a person like that, but it's a very effective person. And I think Manuel has the same kind of, Manuel Chavez has the same kind of, you know, it's a personal thing, and they're not going to do it, you know. And I think that's what I feel to do. But anyway, so we know we have power, we'll get them, right? Okay, now how do we develop that power?
Well, you know, it seems to me that I get a feeling just sitting here that we're really...
Why don't you tell us, can you tell us in about 3 minutes what you did in Toronto? From the beginning down to the, until he cracked.
Well, it involved a guy named Kulata, who is the biggest seller of wine grapes in North America. And most all of his grapes, now, very few of his grapes come from Dumas. About 95% of his grapes come from other people in California. About 5% of the grapes that he gets come from Dumas. Now, I knew that grapes were coming into Toronto, but I couldn't find them. My railroad connections weren't that good at the time. So I just went around until I found 7 freight cars of Dumas grapes. And something happened to me. You know, I just said, I'm tired of seeing all these people. We've got to do something about those grapes. So I decided what we were going to do with ticket. I didn't care if it was illegal or what. So I just set up a ticket line and went out to where the guy sells the grapes out of his warehouse. They said there were 7 freight cars, one right after the other, all from Dumas to Culata. And I got the Italian people, because you have to understand that the people that were buying these grapes are just ordinary people. I mean, these weren't the wholesalers and people like that. They were just ordinary people. When they get off work, they go out there and they buy 15, 20, 25, or 30 lugs, and they make their own wine. There's about 350,000 Italians in Toronto. Now, this Culata had been talked to before. I had been to see him. He wasn't in, but I had been to see him before. We got an agreement from him that he would not buy any more Dumas grapes. Now, what he tried to tell me was that didn't include wine grapes, and that, you know, I had misunderstood, and that when he made this agreement, and that I was acting in bad faith by having that ticket line out there. But we kept the ticket line out there. We picketed him. We started on... Well, let me tell you what happened first. There's 4 big guys up at this place called Caledonia Road. And there's four guys up there, a guy called Darigo, a guy called Arrigo, a guy called Culata, and a guy called Caledonia. Now, what I did, I got a guy called Jerry Gallagher, who organized the Italians into the labor union. When the Italians first came into Toronto, they were very much discriminated against. And he's good press, this guy. And if Jerry Gallagher could be on the ticket line, I knew the TV cameras would come. So I had Jerry make all the press content. He said he'd be there. So we picked Caledonia first, because there were our rates in there. So there were only 8 of us. There was me, Antonia, and one other girl, and then the seminarians came. Well, we were pitching, I'd say, 20 minutes. When this guy came out of there, mad at a hornet, and he said, I've got Mr. Dumas on the phone. I want you to sit here and listen while I talk to him. So we talked to John Dumas and told him that he didn't want any more of his grapes, but, you know, the usual story. And John, of course, tried to get him to buy the stuff. So then he said, now, are you satisfied? He said, I don't want any more grapes from you until this thing's over. Slammed down the phone. Will you take away that ticket line? So I took away the ticket line, and we went right around the corner to Mr. Culata. Now, Mr. Culata was very nice first, you know. He was interviewed by the TV people. Everybody was there. And all he said was, move over here, you know, you're on private property. And so the first day we ticketed, he wasn't too upset. We went back the next day with double the same amount of people. It was easy to get people because these people, it's from 5 to 9 in the evening is when the heavy traffic comes into that place. Well, the next night, nobody was buying these grapes. We had people of all Italians were in Italian, or Reapers were in Italian. We had Italian people who were talking to them to come in. So then he came down. That's when he came down and wanted to talk. And there were 2 union people, a guy from the steel workers and a guy from the glass bottle blowers. And my real big problem was these guys telling me what to do, really, you know. They said, pull the picket line. The guy wants to talk. Pull the picket line. And I said, no, I'm not going to pull the picket line until that guy calls me and cancels those grapes. So we started getting into a little couple about that. And we finally ended up in the guy's office, all of us talking while the ticketing is still going on outside. So he said he was going to call me the next day. Well, we decided to have the picket line again the next day. And this is when the guy came and he said he'd send a telegram to Dumas and he said how he was going to word it. We called Jim. Now, the thing that really bothered the guy, as I told you before, was the fact that we were going to get more pickets. See, the guy said, I can't cancel my contract with Dumas. I've got a contract with him. I can't cancel it. So this is when he wouldn't call Dumas. And I said, okay, we'll talk to people who know about canceling these contracts. So we called Delano. He thought he was talking to Caesar. He was actually talking to Jim. Jim said, which was really very, very good, and you don't know how important this was. Jim said something that was very important to the two, one of the union guys listening on the phone, too. He said, look, I know that she knows what she's doing. And, you know, I have confidence in her, and whatever she decides to do is okay. This really helped me with those other 2 union guys who were really telling me, you know, you don't understand, and you're just, you know, you've only been in this for 6 months or something like that. So that helped me personally. I also got these guys off my back. And so I said, we're going to stick with this ticket line. So he finally ended up sending the telegram. He had me send the telegram, and then he served us with an injunction. So we couldn't picket there anymore. But the point was, that guy didn't sell any of our grapes. Now, then we went over to Arrigo. Edmund got Caledonia, we went over to this, Edmund got Cunada, we went over to this guy named Arrigo. Now, I also talked to this guy before, all these people I had talked to before. And here they were very friendly and nice, and who I was. Well, Arrigo was really scared, because he said that we could put him out of business with a fixed line. And he was right. Cunada could take it. You know, this guy, 500 train cars would break the month he gets. Arrigo doesn't get that much, and most of his came from Jimana, we found out. So, he called. Now, we had a priest there. This is very, very important. And he responded more to Father Chassie than he did anything else. When he talked to John Jimara, he said, he's got a priest here, John. You know, and he's very simple, humble. And I sort of knew this about him a little bit, too.
Yes,
you know. And he said that he's got a priest here. And he kept talking to him, and he's saying, look, you tell me to do one thing, and he tells me to do something else. He said, I'm a good Catholic. And a priest is sitting here telling me, you know, that I can help. You know, all that sort of stuff. So he said, well, what in the hell kind of Catholic is he if he's out there and there's just a bunch of comments and sort of thing. Anyway, he called and he canceled. So all four of those people up there, and I would say 95% of the wine gates that were sold right there. So all four of those people canceled. And then, and I know I got reports back from Delano that they weren't even bothering to send out any more grapes. And we checked. Now, Cunada did get some more. He got a few more. Caledonia didn't get any more. Arrigo didn't get any more. And Malagerio, I think the other guy was, didn't get any more either. And to give you just a little bit of a follow-up, when I went into Montreal to see a guy named Delaurier, who is Jimara's broker there, I just walked into his office, and all I said is, you know, my name is Marion Moses, I'm from the United Farm. Well, he about blew his stack. And he told me, he said, look, you're not going to start any strike here. If you start any funny business, we're going to have you deported. And he really got livid. And they really hurt. There's no question. That was all over the social terminal out at the food center in Ontario, and also all the way into Montreal. It also got into one of the trade magazines, I found out. So that's sort of what happened in Toronto. It was pretty exciting for a time. It was a really big problem. The only real problem was all those union people telling you not to do this and not to do that and not to do something else. But just sat there and made that guy so mad. He was, I'm sure his blood pressure was way, 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 way up. He was sitting there, he was saying, he said, I'm a reasonable man, Miss Moses. And he said, I've never been so upset in my life. He was shaking. He was literally shaking. And he was saying, how can you do this? You know, and you know, he couldn't even talk to me. Things like this. And, you know, I was just sitting there very blandly and sweetly and just saying, well, just call Mr. Jamar and we'll go away. You know? But we made him mad. I guess that's important. And he lost business. He said $20,000. We lost the injunction.
That's
why I
like
black suits and white collars.
I don't think you make a good father.
But we actually said in my phone is straight, you know. God damn it, I'm going to get rid of the straight. It's the last thing I do. And then, like you said, I just zeroed in on that.
Get
ready.
Yeah. Better get under it. Any more on how to stop Joseph?
I don't understand that.
Has to go like hell to generate power. You know, I have to go around many, many times, many revolutions per minute. We similarly have to just, you know, buckle down and get a lot of work done. That's just going to take your power.
How much time have we got?
We've got half an hour.
No, I mean... <right there>.
Well, 39 minutes.
Huh?
Why don't we... we've got half an hour. We're going
to... No, I mean, how much time have we got to do this? How much time
do we have to get Joseph? Well, before we answer that, I want to put Jim on so he can give us some figures. And then we'll let you have a little fun with us. Okay.
Have we been talking about Joseph as an example or as the guy?
As an example and maybe as the guy. As the guy.
Yeah.
Well, we'll determine that by the... But I think specifically we can determine that. Can you...
Well,
you have a little idea of, first of all, where did
we
go?
Be better prepared for that with the stuff that's in the box. But Ken Blum was in Delano yesterday and went over figures that I had been pulling together of how much grape I thought Diamara still had in his cold storage. And I was off quite a bit because I'd forgotten the truck lot. I just figured the car lot.
As far as I can figure, the railroad shipments are about, haven't changed too much. They're about the same as they were last year. But Ken figured in the truck lot, and to make a long story short, we figure that there must be around 250 to 300 railroad cars left in there. Now, against that figure, we took another, tried to take an inventory of Jim R.'s grapes on, what is today, Tuesday. Tuesday, and we checked out, there are 18 small rooms, divided up in 18, that's 18. Then there are 10 very large rooms, and 10 of these size rooms, estimated 10 of these rooms, make up about one of these rooms. These are cold storage rooms, as Jim already said. And there are 10 of these. That's 10. Now, of those 10, the person who was checking for us was able to get into three of them. And in the three that he was able to get into, they were all the beers. And there was a total of 68,000 lugs, which would be about 52 car lots, 52 box cars in three of them, 52 car lots in three of these large rooms, three of the 10. So now, seven of the large rooms were locked in such a way that the person who was doing the checking couldn't open the door either electrically, they got electrical locks on. He couldn't open them by throwing the switch, and he couldn't open them manually, which means he either got, you know, gold in them or else something really crazy about them. But the refrigeration was on in all 10 of them. In these, the doors were all open, but in the other seven, the doors were locked shut and the refrigeration was on.
James, excuse me. How many box cars in each one of these? About,
Well, probably 18, a third of 52. So we probably figure, no, let's say that there's 15 in each one. That would be 7 times 15 is what?
105.
Now, these weren't full, by the way. They would, I don't know how many they hold, but even though they had 52 in all three, they were a long way from full. So we don't know what's in the other. So if there were 10, not full ones, if there were 10 just like each of these all together, why, it'd probably be around 150 cars. Well, Ken's figures were that there probably were closer to 300. A lot of things, you know. I mean, he was just trying to figure in all kinds of ifs and ands and buts, you know. I would say there couldn't be less than 100, and there couldn't be more than 350 at the most. And I think it's probably someplace right in the middle there.
That's what the guy told me, about 250 lately.
What's it mean that they're revered?
That's the other thing. Revered, it just means that those days were revered. However, the person who was checking for us asked a DMR who was around there whether there were any Thompsons. He said, no, the Thompsons are all gone. But because we still have a lot of emperors. And I have all the labels that were in here written down, but I haven't written them.
Are the wine grapes?
There are no more wine grapes.
The wine grapes aren't...
they're drugged.
They're drummed and they put in the box and they away they go the same night.
Oh, that's the other thing. They have to be sold 2 days within they get there. That's another reason that line was affected, because in 2 days they lost. If they didn't sell it, they'd be gone. And of course, the other stuff they can put for it. They have to sell that much too.
Well, let's say he has 200 in cold storage. And he shipped out four on the 26th. So he's pushing them. If he kept 200 and you have it's probably worth, at this season, it's worth about $6,000 per car. Well, that's $1.2 million.
So let's take the high. There's no pending any stuff.
Now, are there very recently pictures of cold storage stuff or what?
Cold storage stuff, yes.
Do you pick this early in the season?
Right after Tom. Right after Tom.
Yeah,
we'll do it. Now, he can do one of two things. He can sell them. See, the other thing's going to be difficult to sell them because he sells, he's got a good price on them. In other words, he's giving the guys a break. And so there's 10 buyers. Say there's one buyer and there are say, 50 growers selling grapes in New York, and Jamal is selling them 50 cents or a quarter cheaper than the others, and they're about saying they're great. If I'm the buyer, I'm going to buy them because I'm saving money, you know. So that's something a little harder to choose. One more thing you have to contend with. So he sells them, but even though he's selling them, he's losing money, and then he's not getting as much. So supposing we stop him completely. Supposing we just, boom, close him down. They're not going to rock, they're going to go to wine. So he's going to lose quite a bit, not everything, he's going to lose quite a bit, but then, you know.
It's about 8-1.
8-1.
If he goes into wine, he gets $1, if he sells it, he gets 8, you know, that ratio.
So he doesn't even make the expenses on that one. But he just doesn't, you know, it's one day.
One other thing is, I would bet that he's got grapes stored in Los Angeles, you know, we don't know where, but there might be 25, 50 car lots in L.A.
No.
And there may be 12 or 15 on the rails all over the country, and there may be another 20 or 30 in different cold storages being sold right at the time. So
beat all the guys in Delano, just stop all the grapes in New York City. Don't anybody buy grapes in your city, and we got all the guys in the lane signing up with us.
Yeah?
I think so.
All the grapes?
Yeah.
All the Delano
grapes.
And how can we take the most of all the people down in New York?
Huh?
Can we take all the people to New York?
We'll see. We're going to make a plan with you guys, and you're going to tell us. Say, on an average, 5 a day, right?
No.
Minimum. With trucks and everything?
I've been having two and a half days. And you can see, it's usually one a day up by rail. And those trucks are coming in. Let's say at least two and a half. Maybe three.
Five a day. And it's, say there's just 100 car lots there. 20 days. See, last year, and a year before, and as far as I know, but mostly since we started the strike, by February the 3rd, there was by February the 3rd, there were no more piggybacks in Delano. They came from Bakersfield, one or two, and loaded up, and they went back to Bakersfield. But there was no more loading. The piggyback loading on the train stopped on February the 3rd. And the first year of the strike, it went on to about February the 22nd, I believe. So we've got January. In January, the rate is going to clear his.
He's going to clear
250. Well, no, we're saying he's got 100 to make very clear.
Oh,
he may have 150, we'll say 100. But we've got January to clear.
Well,
I think Joseph would, with the rabbis and with, you know, with all these, I think Joseph would put more than. Be more than willing, and with all this, you know, just a blip, you know. Just, you know, hitting him, you know, the team approach.
Well,
if it doesn't get Jamal, we don't have to worry about New York. Then we can go on to Detroit or, you know, or Boston or someplace. But if we get Joseph to call it quits, you know, and call Jamal, I think that. If Jamal doesn't give in, we're pretty close to getting him to give in. And if we get two, I'm almost convinced that he will. He has to, because that's a lifelong investment he's got.
These are people he's been dealing with for years.
Well, as far as we know. Yeah. They're major. These are major guys.
Some of these guys,
Jopin
used to be a grower in Bakersfield. He's got a brother who's a major grower. Yeah. And he shipper in Bakersfield. He probably, Jamal set him up again. Yeah, they probably do know each other for years and years.
That doesn't mean I'm necessarily
I think it does. I think it means they spent a lot of life, whether they're friends or not.
When I called you, Mark, and we tried to get other people to call, because they wanted to be called you, Mark, and have you, Mark, tell me to go to hell, you know, which he did through the secretary. So when I called him, the secretary was there, and she said, I gave my name, and she was very surprised that I was calling. And she said, well, wait a minute, wait just a second. So she came back and she said, Mr. Guimara is not here. Mm-hmm. He's out. And I said, what's the name? Well, there's two or three of them, one junior. So I asked for the other two, and she said, no, they're all out. And his attorney's also out. They're all out in the field inspecting fruit. But she said, and I said, wait a minute. So she went back for about, maybe 2-3 minutes. You know how long he's thinking on the telephone. She came back and she said, well, he'll be back in about an hour and a half. And then she said, wait a minute. And then she called back. And so that's why she said, Guimara, Mr. Guimara, I have no information here, no notes or no. Anyway, Mr. Guimara didn't call you. And I said, no, he didn't call me. I'm calling him. And because I want to talk to him. So, but she said, you know, and then I didn't call us for an hour and a half. I just didn't. But there was something in the newspaper, the LA Times. Was it the LA Times?
After the picketing on Thursday night, Friday morning, then Saturday, McCordy had a press conference in which they said that they'd been trying to get Guimara and the union together. And it's fairly obvious that it was Guimara who was the one who negotiated. Then it went from there, it went into the issue of that there had been an incident at the produce terminal in which 20 or 30 or what is it, they see the number of boxes in the state that they've totally destroyed. And then it quoted one of the corporation officers, I think he's the treasurer, saying if the union people would like to sit down and talk about this, I'd be glad to talk to them about it, but it has to be made clear that I don't represent GMR Media Corporation, it's GMR Food Corporation. He made a public statement to the effect that he'd be glad to sit down and see if he could see something to
prevent all the boxes being knocked over.
That's right.
Yeah. So what happened? We could get all the grapes in New York to, and she done that?
Let's go.
New Mexico chili.
Yeah.
We
would never give him the bar because he had 92 labels that he could use. How many do? 92 labels.
He said 55
when the guy from the sister talking to him. And then
he said, I've been given a list of 40 labels.
And
he said 40. He said,
that's
what
he's
fine.
Well, I'm talking about
Andrew. I'd like to come back and talk about, for just, you know, we're talking for the last hour. Tomorrow. The last thing we're going to do is talk about, you know, how to get Joseph and some of the others. But now, tell us, since, for some of the mistakes or the things that we didn't do right in Delano, as you see from your own, you know, your own operations, money, lack of information, couldn't get a hold of us, you asked us to do something we didn't, all those things. Yes.
From our information, I don't know, maybe. Start picking tomorrow, and the grapes were already there.
What's that?
The efforts are going to start tomorrow, and they were already in Boston.
Oh, yeah?
They were
already. We spotted
them already.
We were saying they were just going to start, and they were already in Boston? This is Guimara grapes?
The Empress.
Empress? Well, they weren't the Cardinals, huh?
No.
No?
Cardinals are
the
Prince
grapes.
No, it's the Empress.
They weren't the others. What are the others? The other looked like an emperor.
Cardinals.
He had Cardinals also over here in Duco. A lot of them.
But they're not, because you know the bed, sir.
Is there any way, is there any possible way we can get better bail information? I think that's the single biggest problem here.
Yeah.
If we could know, in Toronto, that was a very, very easy part of the job, too, because I finally got to somebody who could tell me, and I knew it, a day before it was coming in, some guy, he called me, telling me everything, and I knew who it was consigned to, and when it was going to arrive. And I knew who to hit, right away I knew who to go see, ahead of time.
Okay, hold that, Holly. If we don't get to it tonight, then we'll come back tomorrow. But what about the Simpson and Delano?
Well, there's some things I think that could have been done. Now, for instance, Jamar's using the labels of other growers. But one deal, if he's using the labels of other growers, he can also be using the shed, right? Okay, but in order to find out what shed he's using, the rate should have been followed from the field to the shed. The second thing is that in the central market we knew exactly what was coming through Jamar's house and everything, exactly where it was going. But at the same time, there's 50 or so other large supermarkets with warehouses all over the place for trucks to go directly, bypass the central market and go directly to those supermarkets. And we don't know because there's no following from Edison. So, for instance, food giants completely cut down what they're buying. To do the very minimum from Jamar because they're afraid of a restraint of trade. So, they cut down, from 600 lugs a night down to about 2 or 3. But,
well,
they could be pulling a trick on, food giants.
They were afraid of us?
They were afraid of a restraint of trade to,
from Jamar.
So, they just bought a little bit every night instead of a whole lot, let's see. But the deal is they could be tricking us by heading grid or whatever, they're directly trying to mark over there. Now that's just an example. There are other 50 other markets and for us to find out, number one seems to, but that's out of the question. Number two is taking off. Well, that was one thing I'd be back,
One thing was not following the grid from the field to see where they were going.
So that we can call them the shed.
And the other one was not following from the shed to Los Angeles.
The rail thing isn't so important to Los Angeles tonight. If the 50% chance there's anything doing with rail there, some impact around there. The number one thing is trust.
Yeah, it really allows the job. We tried to follow to Los Angeles and we got, we just didn't have the
rolling stock.
We didn't have a tie.
And also the manpower.
But, the other one was true, At the end, we had a very good count because, at the end, the tickets would count the number of trucks that left the field and how many boxes. And then the people at the shed would count how many boxes came in, how many trucks came in. And then they would give the information to the mail, and the mail would compare what the field reported tonight, what the tickets reported. And I think it was about the last month, it was always. Once in a while, there were some trucks that were missing, and we thought that in those cases, someone had made a mistake. Either at the field, they reported one too many, or they reported one less over at the shed. But we did find one, because we were doing this on one occasion. Maybe this is an indication of what Jim was saying. We found a truck, a Lucas truck, driving, May and I are driving, coming back from Picket Line about, 10 o'clock in the morning. And we're going directly out to Early Mile in 56. And we're not going too fast. This truck passes us, we passed the truck, and it's a Lucas truck. But we look over, Mayo looks over, he recognizes the driver as a Jamar driver. And he said, this damn guy is a Jamar driver. What is he doing with Lucas? So we followed him and went to Lucas, to the Lucas shed in Early Mike, and he had Jamar labels. And so we went back, and we went to the shed, all the way back to Newport, and we talked to the pickets, and someone was doing a lookout. And I think it was the same day, the final day, we got a report that another Lucas truck had gone into the, with the Jamar driver, into the Jamar field and loaded. But it wasn't, that much. But I have a hunch that he stored great stuff.
Oh, yeah. That's just a very simple thing to do. He's got that field on.
Yeah. But,
because, we got used to the markings of Jamar's boxes. We don't have to look at the labels to tell on the boxes that there's Jamar nuts. Whoever can, the pencil marks and everything. The way it's stacked, we know right away without even looking at the labels for this. And there are some that, these drivers, there are some that are pretty honest with us. They said, we got it from Tangerine, or we got it, from Early Mart, or we got it from over there in Rich Grove, And then there's some, we picked it up in Edison, but they had no, it didn't even resemble anything.
That was your mom.
They had things all mixed up.
What else?
Me.
the information on the train was just there maybe 6 or 7 days after he left Delano, and by then, well, it would feel good, but I mean, it would be nicer if when you get this information, you could send it out where we could get it as soon as possible.
It's not pretty easy. We have more things to know.
As far as one is concerned, I have only one need to try to go. So I was getting an allowance for someone. I stayed at home, whatever else you need. However, one thing that is working enough to cover up. See, we're renting an apartment every day. And we get out of them in Monte Carlo. And apparently from the feeling, and I kept it several times, every time it came up, I had to call and to call the landlord to get the money. I don't know, maybe the figure, I think whether if they send it once, it will stay for the rest of the time we're out there in the boys' house. I got to a point where I felt that a week before it came up, I had to call them so I would have it in time. Several times until I called and they said, well, we didn't know anything about rent.
It just happened at the time of the shift between Andy and Tony?
We don't know when that happened.
No,
I don't know when that happened. I just know that I never got it on time unless I never got it period unless I called for it.
Okay.
I think that's something that has to be taken into consideration also.
It's a very, very minor thing, but I think it's important. In the very beginning, we used to get very good reports about what was going on in all the other cities. And that seems about the past, I guess, month and a half or so. I never got any idea what was going on. I just felt like, I don't know. Really, it sort of makes, at least we knew what was going on. We used to get some letters that said Vancouver, Seattle, Portland.
He was up there for a number, I think it was about five or six months. And I think that there was some resentment because he saw three people come and go. And, you know, they never really stuck it out more or less. I don't know if it's just as any criticism or less, but he started to feel like, you know, they'd forgotten me. And I don't know, it's just when I got there, I could feel the resentment. Well, another one's coming, another choice, you know. And also that there's just almost bad communication, you know, because he felt like he'd been deserted and left alone, and then somebody else comes in and starts over again.
Yeah. Who is it? What were the changes there?
I know two. I don't know what to do.
Friend called two and three back on himself.
Oh, well, there's two coming and going at one.
Yeah. Tom is actually there. About a month and a half, maybe 2 months. And I was there a little over a month, I guess. And I don't know how long Eddie was there, but, you know, working together, you know, you could tell, you know, a little slowdown, and you got very tired. Then I won't say anything about the car. But, you know, like, when we cleaned up Kansas City, we felt like if we just had just a little bit more, like a car that would be capable of doing the job and not have to go borrowing money from your anyone up there who organized it, we could have run down to Wichita and grabbed a room and checked out there. We could have gone to Joplin. We could have even taken the John over to Omaha and see what was happening in Moscow. But we didn't ever even ask, because we had bad experience with checks a number of times and communication problems and mail being sent to the wrong address and stuff. We said, well, we're getting something now, so it's not suspicious.
That's not... David.
We were working on the assumption that there were about 40 labels in the book. And then after the drawers came in the airport, it was sent to there was another list in the land that we had never gotten.
I don't know where you got that.
I've never figured out what you're talking about.
sometimes when you watch a liberal, you know.
Anyway, that is better than what we said before.
If we go, I want to go back. we're going to operate on the assumption we're going to log around here. Are we going to have a list of labels? What do we see there?
Yeah. Well, that's not a criticism. Yeah. Save that up for tomorrow. We have to get into it. Any more criticism?
But he needs to keep them in Doctorita. It's a full thing.
You know, you're getting sick, you know. We want you to go out and order all the things so we can come out with our. I'm just kidding.
You're not good to him.
I missed out on a few labels too, after about a month or so, and I had missed, I think,
Well, it's pretty expensive that we're doing it now.
Yeah, but you know, it's like, I know a lot of times I grab the phone, you know, and start talking, and then I always leave out the purpose of the call, but then all these little things, if you have that picture time.
I just found it kind of in general when I wrote things, though I know it was ignored completely, and the only way to get any kind of response was to call, though, you know, he was saying he felt guilty about calling, and sometimes when I wrote, it wasn't that urgent, but, you know, after a week and a half or 2 weeks of him calling, and we didn't hear anything, I felt like, you know, I just said, and we missed out sometimes, I think the communication altogether, and sometimes, to be quite frank, again, we would call or write to one person in Delano, and then somebody else would call, you know, about the same thing 3 weeks later. And,
later.
It seemed like at times that nobody's down here was talking to anybody else.
Well, that happens to me.
I'll find out that.
Probably.
You go around the country, especially they say, well, you guys are really organized.
Yep.
You only knew. I say, well, you guys are really organized, I say, you really knew. I asked him the other day, he said, you know, oh, this guy that wants to come back, what's his name? From Michigan?
Yeah.
He said, he came and visited for 3 days, and then last night he left this morning, but he wants to come and work with us. So I asked him, was Delano what you expected? He said, oh, no. No. I said, what, you know, what was your impression? Well, what were the differences? And he said, oh, well, I expected a well-oiled machine, you know, with a very beautiful building and, you know, everything on time. And I said, and that wasn't the case? He said, no.
There's one thing that's trivial, but one time I called up him, and I didn't get him. The someone answered on the phone, and I was just, a person called me, and I don't know who answered him on the phone, but it was like, oh, you know, sort of like that, and then they said, well, he's not here, or, you know, what do you want? It seemed to me that doesn't project a very good image. they made it kind of square to have someone say, you know, good morning, United Farmers.
What do you want?
Good morning, you're welcome.
Thank you.
at least we get an, you know, get an answer sometimes. I remember some guy I met up in his last trip, and he said, you know, I've called, sometimes I get home, he said, I've called you maybe 20 times in the last 2 weeks, and you're wasting the pickup line. And I said, what time? He said, well, every time I call, there's some girl into the telephone, who's in the picket line. I said, oh, I guess, I think that's pretty hard. I used to go to the picket line. And he sort of, I wanted to dismiss him. He said, are you just standing right there in the picket line? And I said, myself, do you remember the last time I was in the picket line? And I couldn't remember. But,
that's a good image.
Well, that's
big.
Maybe someone should be in charge of, yeah.
Well,
Bob?
Bob? Yeah, who are you?
I think the last person to put in the in charge is the guy you had in the month. You had one guy there watched the month office in the night, and you called there. The first thing he said, what you want, who you are. So wait a minute, I go look for him. Think about his bubble, other kind of conversation.
Oh, well, listen, that's even better one. Learned that one. The Lord saw a snake in New York the other day, and he said, yeah, who's this? This door's working on the other. There's a girl on the other end of the line. She says, are you black? Before you're not talking, you know, he said, are you black before you say anything?
What color is your phone?
You hear other things? We're going to teach myself, I guess. Yeah, no, we're guilty of all
this.
Yeah, I've got a
message.
It's 10 o'clock.
The cousin New York.
Yeah.
So we turn in. We got some. We have a few minutes more tape there.
Oh, no, 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 no.
You want to see me? Any?
Go for it, bud.
$1. Because he told me that in the Philippine Islands, it's a custom when you give a wallet to put a little money in it. Yeah, if you get it without money, it's bad luck. So he gave it with a dollar. So I got.
These people that did help us up to now. Well, I'm pretty sure you saw they're doing this, or somebody doing it, but I believe that if it's not being done, some kind of an edit to be sent to those people, thank you, buddy, and so on, you know. Because
we need the names and addresses of all those people, before you leave the line.
I don't think anybody who sent a name or asked for a letter, you know, that we haven't gotten out, but if we don't get them,
So you can work on that, you know. It's very important. I agree with you.
I wrote a list of all the donations, and I've been a thank letter to them, but then also wrote a list for the Leno.
Michael Kera, when I was, you know, on this last tour, I went to other places, but the ones I went to, and Michael Kera, a big organization going over there. A lot of people involved, you know, and had almost took over the SLC office and had a couple of girls and.
Complaints
of a lot of people that we're not consistent on, man. You guys are here and touch a lot, and then you take off, and we don't hear about the first month. Yeah. All of a sudden, you're back right in hell again. We don't know, you know, what to do. People get carried away on other projects.
Well,
you
didn't use it anyway.
But,
no,
not something.
Yeah. I kind of
think that that's like an excuse on their part, because I don't think they've been everything that's solid.
So I just
feel right
I went the line. Well, you know.
Mike, we don't know what your experience is. My experience, I mean, those that help, you know, the ones that truly are interested, don't get any problems.
Yeah, right.
You make all kinds of mistakes, and you don't compliment them, you don't thank them, and they're still out there helping, you know? And the ones that help you, sometimes it seems to me, at least, you know.
Well, there is one good point, though, that comes out of it. When you do have big, faithful people that you can depend on, that's right, and Mary Ann and, you know, the rest of them down there, that each have their own little group, and they involve those groups in what we're doing. And unless we let them know, for instance, if you don't go back there, you know, and we don't carry on in Los Angeles, or if any of the rest, if you don't go back to the community where you were before, and you don't let the people, you know, the key people know why you're not back, and you don't tell them where you are, what you're doing, then they don't have anything to report back to all the people that they have contact with to keep them sort of alive while we're gone. And not that we're going to lose them, but we're going to lose a lot of that support that they have behind them. And whereas if we let them know, then they'll pass it on to these other people and keep it at least partially simmering there, you know.
That's very true, President. Well, I think that's in Chicago, you know, a lot of people even feel like the rest of the Jewish labor community, the first thing they said,
Way of sending donations
to
your check.
Is
to relay it to you or
send
it directly to
from
the city?
Well, if it goes to yesterday, no, I don't care how it comes out, but we don't have a policy in that. I don't take any money with me. Anywhere I go, you know, they give me money so I can resend it. I make sure I have the money or the check with me, and I said, I give it back and say, you send it to the lady. But because I'm traveling and I don't want to, you know, keep it with me.
Well,
but
it's like we sent a lot of checks down. But one of the things that always used to aggravate me at the moment was I never knew if the check stopped there. And the dollar we send for registered mail, you know,
it was like
food today. Yeah. And, just a simple reply.
Yeah,
a copy of a thank you letter or
something.
Anything.
We don't do that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a good idea.
You know,
and we're very bad on that. We do get the thank you letters out to the people, but it's very, you know, it's a big push to do it.
But
we have to do is have a copy made, a carbon copy, and just send it to the Boy Scout people. So,
you know, well, I can send letters to these people. Thank you, incidentally, to handle business. You know, this time, I'm going to you know, the people that have policy is all there, you know. And it's pretty hard for them to send the money to the Leno. They don't want to send the money to the Leno. They prefer to send somebody that these people will see it there, you know. And then for us, we'll send it to the Leno. And eventually, help us because we keep a track of the money with someone out of there.
The only trouble about that is, though, that we come and go. And if they're going to continue sending it, they might be sending it to an office that doesn't exist anymore, and they might not get the later contribution.
Well, I put the original office at the end of J.O. They've seen it. You can see it in one of the L.U.U., you know, whatever you can do for the end of J.O.
Yeah.
He didn't give us quite a bit of money.
he's helping us form a budget. Budget for something like this. He gives some, he gives 10 pounds a week and 5 orders. And he gives really so much a week.
So, you were sending all the money out, or you were sending all the money to Delaney?
You know, the other problem is, like, I didn't find out that lesson, and it's because I think it's time to meet them. I got him spoken to the membership meeting, but I had no way of knowing that
wouldn't
help. Yeah. And I'm sure that other contributions possibly
bring in. Yeah, I think it's important. I really thought about this. Because we should, whether or not it's, you were responsible for getting that money there or not, it would be good for you to know that local was interested enough to.
Right.
We should say by area, you know. Yeah.